This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Brains vs. Brawn. I'm your host, Shannon Gus, here to talk about week four. It was a bit of a calmer week, which I actually needed. I caught my breath for a couple of episodes, and it ended in an epic and very sad blindside. And I have the perfect person to recap this podcast with for a few reasons that I'm sure we'll talk about, but like genuinely, so many connections, it's ridiculous. This is someone that I've done both of his deep dives with, but have never actually got to recap the show with. I'm very excited about it. It is the Golden God himself, David Jennett. David, welcome to the podcast.
Let's go.
Yes.
Hey, Shannon, how you doing?
I'm doing so good. You know, I am sad about Simon. I spoke to him this morning. You know, that rattles me like it did when you first got voted out, but maybe he'll come back on an all-star season and win. So that's silver lining.
That's it. Hard lesson to learn, I suppose. But poor guy.
Yeah.
I mean, going out with two.
Yes.
Brutal.
It is brutal because look, these are the connections I want to talk about. You got voted out with one idol, just for one. As I said, it was historic that he left with two.
That was tough enough as it was.
Yeah. I mean, and you've possessed two idols, so you know what it's like to kind of have that type of power. I thought it was a big week for Emmett, and there's some correlation there we can talk about with you. It also had that, like, everyone being disgusting in, like, the one-person reward, which is something I think you have really encouraged too much.
Well, that's definitely a favorite of mine.
Yeah. I blame you for all of it in terms of how disgusting it's got. It was Benji first, then you took it to another level, and everyone's tried to top you since, and I don't think that they have.
I don't think they got there.
No.
Like, there was some good efforts. I thought Emmett spreading the chocolate on his arms, that was nice. I really was like, you know, that's good strategic reward gameplay there.
It's good. It's like a lot of food groups that now have been ruined for me. So that's what I like, you know, watching Survivor.
They were wearing gloves when their hands came out of that white chocolate. It's pretty disgusting.
So disgusting. So I will never eat white chocolate ever again. So that's done.
Who does anyway? Gross.
I like white chocolate. I did yesterday. Now I don't. But look, we haven't caught up since the deep dive. It's been well over a year. Before we jump into it, tell the listeners, how are you? Yeah, I just watched you on The Apprentice. Like, you've got a lot going on at the moment. What's been happening?
I've been a busy boy. It's been good. I mean, Apprentice came through, which was a very different experience to Survivor. Been making some television, been doing some stuff for Getaway. I have some more Getaway stuff coming up. I'm pitching. I have my own show coming up, which I can't really say too much about, but we're filming in October, which will be good. So that's fun. And then the most important thing of all, Shannon, I have my own beer now.
Yes, I'm aware because you Express posted me some.
Express.
Yeah.
It's very important. We got it on the podcast today.
And it did. It arrived this morning. I want to say also that I watched The Apprentice for you and Janine, and I actually really enjoyed it. Although I thought you were absolutely robbed. Like, don't know what was going on there. But I just wanted to say you didn't deserve it.
Well, it was a good paycheck. So I wasn't robbed. In fact, they might have been robbed, I think, value-wise.
Fair enough. No. You brought a lot to it. You brought at least me and my husband as two viewers. That's pretty good. So worth your weight in whatever.
I know what I was bringing to the show. I was very aware of what you know, it was expected of me, so I delivered.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is essentially that it is a game. As much as they like to be like, it's not a game, it's a game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Same way. And I know the good Lord Alan Sugar takes it very seriously. Like, it's not a game. But the episode after I'm voted out, he hands an advantage to Martha, and I was like, okay, buddy. I see where we're going with this.
Yeah. He had like a vendetta against you. And I was pretty mad at Janine. Like when you guys were interacting, I was loving that. And then when she sold you out, I was like, Janine, stop that.
Yeah. But Janine and I understand each other. We understand TV. And
yeah.
It is just, it's about getting those good moments going, you know, where I think that's, I would never begrudge her for that. I'm like, that's her job. That's what she's paid there to do. That's what I'm paid there to do.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. I think working with a different production company was interesting. Working with people, I think obviously people go on to Survivor are a lot more savvy about that thing of like, this is the game. We're here to play the game. Whereas a lot of people on Apprentice had, you know, they were led to believe it was a feel-good charity show.
Can you imagine? Which,
it was some good feel-good charity. It I mean, was, we raised $1 million for charity, which was amazing.
It was, yeah.
So the end goal was correct, I think. So the journey for some people just wasn't as pleasant as they would have liked.
I mean, I loved it, honestly. Yeah, completely tuned in for you and Janine and then ended up really enjoying it. I was also in lockdown, but I think it wasn't just the lockdown effect. I actually really liked it. But I want to get back to the beer that you Express posted to me. Because when I saw this, I was like, I can't wait to describe this to the listeners because it's an audio podcast. They can't see what I'm looking at. So,
Shannon, you are actually outside of myself and my business partners. You are the first person to taste it from the can.
Oh my God, I have not tasted it yet. Maybe, are we going to do that now? I kind of want to have all my faculties. I think we should do it maybe at the end.
I'm having one.
You're having one right now? I mean, I don't drink a lot of beer. Okay, I'll open
it. Well, it's 6.5% too, Shannon. So you got to go easy with it.
I'm opening it up. As you can hear, ooh, it is bubbling. It went through the post, so. That makes sense. Let me describe it first because it's important that I do for the listeners. So what it says Fat Bull Golden God IPA. Got to get that branding. And it's like
Fat Bull, the company I'm working with, they're making the beer for me.
Right. It's black and like silver and then with gold obviously in it. And then it has you in the middle and you're dressed like a god. If I were to describe it for the listeners, I would say like the most similar thing, maybe like kind of like the Statue of Liberty. Like you've got a little crown. Got the toga, little lightning bolt coming out of your hand. Then in the other hand, you are cradling a baby. And that baby is holding a beer, gold beer, and looking up at you lovingly. And that baby is John Easto for some reason, right? Like that is John Easto.
Is there any other baby I would want to have in my arms?
Why is there a baby at all? I have a lot of questions.
I feel like you've described it very well, but somewhat understated. I feel like it's understated graphics.
Oh, no, I mean,
you think it's too over? Think it's too aggressive?
No, I mean, I was just shocked about John Easter. When I looked at it, I was like, I guess. Where's Luke?
It's always very funny going into a business meeting and pitching. I'm a man of wild ideas, I suppose.
Yeah.
And when we were, I got offered a hot sauce to make a hot sauce. And I was like, I don't know anything about hot sauce. And around the same time, I was thinking, you know, I wanted to do something business-wise. What could I get into? I've got this Golden God brand thing going. We've gone well with the merch. What do I parlay that into? I was like, well, I like beer. I wonder if I could get a beer going. And just because of some dealings I was doing with a beer and chicken festival they had out here, I get connected to some guys. And then we've been going into some meetings. I was like, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And they were like, you want to do what? And neither of the guys were that familiar with the show. But the idea was for me, you know, the Golden God has risen again to bring beer to the immortal. You know, I'm bringing beer to the immortals. Come on up. And we wanted like a bogan. I was like, I need to have a little baby bogan that I'm like feeding beer to. And what would be good taste? And who's the best bogan in Australia? Shannon, you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, it probably is John. I mean,
it's like, got to be. Who beats John in the bogan stakes?
Because I didn't know why there'd be a bogan. Like, it was confusing to me, but now that you've explained it, like, I think I get it. There's like clouds. It's very Nordic, I would say. It is quite epic. I'm not someone who really drinks, and I definitely don't drink beer, I will drink this. It says intense citrusy flavor with a floral touch, notes of peach and tropical fruits with a notable mango character, I like that, and shades of lime and mandarin. So it's not the first time I've taste tested something on the podcast. I hope it goes better than that, because that was actually a disaster. So,
well, don't drink it too quick if you haven't had lunch.
Oh, my God. It really is 1.9 standard drinks.
And it doesn't taste super strong either. It's a very subtle alcohol flavored beer, so if you're a beer fan. But anyway, it's great. It was good. It's just fun to have John involved too, because I love John. And we were discussing the idea, and I'm like, you know, when we put a Bogan on there, we should get John. And I was like, John, I want to pay you. We want to pay you to put your face on the can. And he was like, nah, mate, just send me a couple of cartons. So, match made in heaven.
Did you really hold him in the chute and then reduce him down to a baby size? Or
this was the other thing that was really funny, is a good friend of mine, Phil de Glanville, does all my design work, and he's a great photographer and does all that kind of stuff. And I was discussing with him, like, how do we get this done? Because you're gonna, when the campaign comes out, you're going to laugh. There's a really good animation attached to the campaign.
I bet I will.
And Phil was like, what we need is John to just have a bunch of photos of different pictures of his face, like in different poses. And because John is up north, I was like, John, have you got someone with a decent camera, mate, that could just get your face in different, you know, states of alarm, surprise, trying to suck my nipple, those kind of things? Yeah, mate, no worries. I got it. No worries. And I got like a deluge of about 100 different pictures of John making very animated faces, and they're all amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I don't even know what to say. I feel like, am I describing it well enough? Again, to the listeners, just imagine. It's David. He's a god. He's dressed like the Statue of Liberty. He's holding baby John. Baby John holding a beer, looking at him lovingly. Just want to, you know, remind the people. But I'm going to take a sip now. I'm going to...
Just standard golden god things.
Yes, exactly. Here we go. I'm going to let you know what I think. And then we're going to talk Survivor, I promise. But this is way more fun. I'm sorry. This is more fun. I like it. Not, I mean, I like it as much as I could like a beer, is what I want to say. Like, do I drink beer? No.
Well, as someone who is a beer drinker, I like it very much.
I can taste the mango.
Flavor up Galaxy hops. It's delicious.
I think my husband will like the other one a lot.
Yeah. Sorry I couldn't get you more over there, but we pulled two off the line as they were packing. I was like, we got to get some for Shannon.
No, I love that. I love that you express posted me your new Golden God beer. And I love when I opened it.
You're the first.
I feel special. That was great.
Well, you should feel special.
If I'm not as strategic in this podcast, it's because, like, I'm already feeling it because it's 1.9 standard drink. So that's the most I've drunk probably since my hen's night. But anyway.
Well, Shannon, we're launching next week, I think next Wednesday. You'll be able to buy it online, direct to consumer.
Okay.
So very exciting. And then we're having a big party on the 21st. There'll be some competitions and good stuff the kids can get involved with if you're a beer fan.
I cannot wait for the listeners to go look at the graphic and see if they think I described it well. Because I think that I did. I'm a little buzzy right now, having drunk the John beer. Yes.
Well, on that note,
yes, let's talk Survivor. About
Survivor business.
Yes, let's do that. I mean, I want to get your macro thoughts, and then we're going to get into the week. Thoughts on the season. I mean, it's chaotic AF, I would say, maybe more similar to your first season. What do you think about the season as a whole, and which characters are standing out to you?
I mean, I think it's full chaos. And I know you compared, you said, to my first season, but I don't think the first season was chaos quite like this.
This is more chaotic than probably both of your seasons.
Yeah, I felt like season four was a bit calculated. It was calculated chaos. With this, seems like legit chaos. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that's a product of, like, people being on the show who aren't that familiar with the format, don't know the show or the consequences of some of their actions early on. But it is good watching. It's very good TV.
It's a lot. I mean, your seasons didn't have people getting voted out by accident, as an example. This is a lot. So who are the characters that are standing out to you?
Obviously, Hayley.
Yeah.
Big time. I think she is just playing so well. And, I mean, Emmett, I know there's a lot of people saying about Emmett, like, trying to do what I was doing. What I met Emmett, that's him. He's actually a really good dude. I like what he's doing. I think there's a few people who are playing like good, low key under the radar games, but I'm really interested in Flick as well. I think Flick's doing some cool stuff, and we haven't seen everything about her just yet.
Mm.
I mean, where are you gravitating?
I mean, I'm surprised that Emmett, you're giving him the credit. That's just him. I wanted to address the elephant in the room that he is trying to be you. I thought that he was good this week, but I have called him the Copper God. So that's where I've been going with it. Haley, I think
the shoulders of giants.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're creating an archetype as well as a beer, I think. So, you know, you put that out there and he's seen that the formula works, but I think it's hard to recreate and I think it's hard to pull off and you do that. But I did think he was good this week, which we'll talk about. I think, you know, George obviously is like the character. George, I was like, if anyone's going to be on Celebrity Apprentice after this season.
Of course. How could I forget about George?
I mean, he's been massive. He has, like, so many confessionals compared to everyone left in the game. Like,
no, he's a big chief player. Like, my preference isn't... Like, George would drive me insane on the island. Like, I think there's a... George's style of play I find difficult to deal with. But he's good TV. He's good watching.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, he is narrating a lot of it. I never thought he'd make it to the merge. Now he has, which is just, I think, probably emblematic of how chaotic the season has been. I like a lot of people who have left. I think it's a good cast, but we had some heartbreak through the pre-merge. Shannon, Joey, now Simon. I actually loved my interview with Rachel. So I think we lost a lot of gold, but there's still quite a lot left. I think Gerald is not getting nearly enough strategically and as a character. He's like relegated to the 10-play scenes. Not that there's anything wrong with being relegated to 10-play, but I think he's got a lot. Like, I really do like most of this cast.
I think they're a pretty likable cast. Like, I agree with you on that Gerald thing. Like, even Chelsea, I think for the thing that happened last night, I'd love to know what she's thinking.
Mm.
And I know when they're editing, there's so many players, and now probably they're not important to that part of the story. But we got Danny's point of view. We know Simon's point of view. We know Haley's point of view. I would love to know what's going through Chelsea's mind as all this is happening. Just like one snippet.
Yeah.
You know, whether she's on board, whether she's not, whether she... I just know something.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, she's got 3 confessionals in 12 episodes. She hasn't had a confessional since episode 3. So if she doesn't get a confessional next episode, pretty sure she will break the streak of longest episodes without a confessional. So, look.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. That's statistics for you.
Yeah, and Andrew also only has 3 confessionals compared to George, who has, I think, like 65. So this is the disparity, something that you've probably benefited from on this show. But
well,
this
I got
is, you
to
know,
see
what
something I
with.
Noticed a little bit about Andrew, and I've got Andrew in the sweepstakes.
Mm-hmm.
So all the old contestants, we have a sweepstakes where we, you know, get a player chosen for us, and we got to, mm-hmm. you know, go for the season. Andrew is mine. So yeah. I've been looking forward to Andrew's stuff. I don't know. Andrew seems to do everything under his breath. It's not like you don't see him on camera having a direct chat, talking strat in camera. Like, it's like he kind of wants to keep everything a secret, even from the audience. Have you noticed?
Well, I mean, they're not giving him any content. So I don't know if that's like his fault or the editors. Like, I thought this week.
It's stuff to say. But like, if you look at his strategy chats, you know, he's like, he's by the lake, head down.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this is what I need to do.
They're subtitling him. They need to.
Yeah. I mean, a big part of Survivor is, as you're playing, like, you're making a TV show. If you want your stuff to be on the TV, you say it in front of the camera. I know that's intimidating to people when they go on there, but if it isn't said on camera, how do they catch it? We can't just guess at the conversation you're having, you know?
The thing is that Andrew Crazily is like a YouTube personality with over 500,000 subscribers, but I don't know if he was talking a lot. I think he was more like bare hand catching animals. So
yeah, I like him actually. I think he's, I wish we could get more of what his strategy is and stuff in the game, but
yeah.
I do like what he's doing, and he seems like very balanced and on with the challenges. People seem to like him.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Well, it's like he had the little move where he says to Haley, like, make sure you get him with Flick. And you're like, all right, he's doing something. And then, like, Gerald says to Emmett, like, why are we winning challenges? But then Emmett takes it, gets all the edit, you know, and then it's Emmett's move. So I think some of these under-edited players, like, they're doing more, again, like, it's Danny and Chelsea making the move. Danny will get the credit and the blame, I'm sure, as we go through this. But, like, we don't see those other perspectives. And they used to usually just kind of give it to one person in the group to just kind of talk for the field, I guess.
Well, they kind of have to do that, right, for the audience. And I think also everyone's a hero of their own story. So if Chelsea's talking about the blind side of Simon, for example, right, she's probably thinking, hey, this is my move. I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. This is my thing. Whereas the production has the ability to stand back and be like, well, Haley did this and Danny did this, and they piece that together how they want.
Mm.
So we're getting more production's take on it as opposed to everyone's take. Because if there's 5 people involved in a move, they're all going to claim it. You know what I mean? No one's going to sit back and go, I had nothing to do with that. Someone will be like, oh, but I spoke to Kez or I did that or something, you know?
Yeah. And then the editors are like, well, it can't be all of your move, so it's your move. Yeah, or your George.
I have to give to someone.
Yeah. No, I think it makes sense, but I do think like 3 confessionals in 12 episodes, we can do a little better than that. But anyway, we move forward with this week. We had a couple of chill votes until the Simon vote. But the first two episodes I felt really did belong to Emmett, whether it was the editing or legitimate. That's what we got. And I really am interested to get your take because he's doing a lot here. He ends up throwing a challenge that we saw. I think he's doing a lot to kind of manage Kez, manage the hierarchy. He doesn't flip. Like, it feels really like he's leading that. And, like, by the end of the week, Kez, Gerald, and him are still in the game, as was his intention. Like, he did get some stuff done. So what did you think about what Emmett was doing this week through these first two votes?
I mean, it's clear that he's kind of put himself in that leadership role there, right? And I think that's a difficult place to be in, but somebody kind of has to do it. And I think you saw in the early episodes where he was actually trying to put that off him and be like, well, you know, we all make the decisions around here. It's a collective. Whereas this week he's kind of making it more his own, which is easier for the edit, much easier for the editors to be like, oh, Emmett's a leader of that alliance. But you've seen it recognized by people like George in their boxies where they are actually confirming that Emmett is at the top of the alliance. And I think that's a comfortable place for people to be, for Kez to have him up there, for Gerald to have him up there. Like, that's much better for their games if they're not the visible head. But Emmett wasn't going to be able to avoid that because he's a challenge beast. And so he's visible just because of that anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So he's going to be a visible player. Sometimes you just have to accept that and go with it. So he stepped into that leadership role. And to be honest, I know the fans are kind of like, oh, those were two straightforward episodes, but that was good gameplay by Emmett. He basically said, look, I need to keep Kara and George on side. Perfect. He kept him on side. Perfect. And two people he wanted out went home.
I agree. I mean, it's straightforward because it's good strategy. Some of the chaos we saw earlier in the season was probably because it wasn't good strategy. And even the Simon vote, like, well, you know, Haley was great, but I think I'm going to come in criticizing Danny. Maybe she shouldn't have done that. Like, maybe it should have been another straightforward vote. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes that is definitely the play. I think often that is the play. It's just not for TV. But Emmett, I agree. Exactly. Like, he is in that very natural leadership role, and he's not shying from it now. Like, I think he was quite extreme. For example, you know, the brain women come to him and they pitch it to him, and he actively tells them to their face no, which can be, I think, pretty dicey because it gives them more time to scramble and try and get Kez.
Like, I think if there's a deeper strategy at play with him there where he's like, I'm the guy that will always be straight up with you, and then later on he uses that as a way to be like, I've always been straight up with you during the whole game, and then maybe he does something a bit dastardly later on down the track, who knows? Hoping that's his kind of gameplay, because I don't like the way he speaks out at Tribal like that, where he would be pretty frank about what's going to happen. So I think maybe in his mind, and this is an Emma question, but there's something to be said for him being able to be like, look, I told you straight up, it wasn't anything personal in that vote, Laura, you know, like I told you from the start, you can trust me, even though I'm against you, you can trust me. And that is a good way to play the game sometimes. You know, there are a lot of people I played with that do that kind of thing where they're like, I might be against you, but I never lied to you.
Yeah.
And that could come into play later on, you know?
I mean, I didn't hate it because I thought it was compared to Kez. Like, Kez is in this position where she becomes the more authentic swing vote because she doesn't, like, turn them down to their faces. And the plan that she's faced with is, like, will she flip to rocks to vote with the brains women who she's been voting against?
I don't think Kez was ever on board with that plan.
Okay.
I think that was just some clever editing. I'm sure she probably said it here and there, like as a thought. But I don't really think if she was smart, she was ever thinking about flipping. They just needed that jeopardy in the episode, so they've got the grab. Why not use it?
I agree with you. I have to hope that she wasn't thinking about it because it would have been an all-time terrible move. And I think Kez is better than that. But then I have to ask you, if she's not thinking about it, why is she giving them the line of, I'm a big mushy ball of Play-Doh? Because you compare it to Emmett.
Well, that's what I found. Well, what was funny when she said that, I was like, is Kez comparing herself to Play-Doh? We're going to get some really deep stuff. Yeah. Some deep stuff. Oh, yeah. Play-Doh. That makes more sense.
Yeah. No, I think Play-Doh would have been a lot better. Like, I'm really, you know, contemplating what you're saying to me. I'm definitely thinking about it. I don't know if I'll go with it, but, you know, I don't know a lot about Play-Doh. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, I got kids, so I know plenty. It's messy.
No, I don't know about Play-Doh. And
sometimes
Play-Doh.
It gets hard if it's left out.
But you're talking about Play-Doh, like the kids toy, not the philosopher.
Play-Doh, the kids toy.
Right.
but that was my initial take on it. I was like, did she see Plato? Is he talking about philosophy? We're going to get philosophy here?
Yeah.
Yes. But no. But I think, like, when you, as a player and someone who's played, if you're on board with a plan, I think there's sometimes these things where people think, oh, I can contribute to this. Like, I'm playing my part. I'm acting out. And we're not being obvious about who's getting voted out, even though to the viewer it looks obvious because we've had the setup. Right. From the edit, we're seeing what's happening. But I think that might have just been a thing where Kez was like, I'm playing my part. I'm fooling the guys. I'm tricking them into thinking they have a chance. And then they don't. You know, that's my move. So in her mind, she might be thinking, look, I'm giving them that, but I'm really with old Emmett over here. Emmett, I'll never stray from you, buddy. So she might just be giving them the double play. You know what I mean? As an active role in her deception, I suppose.
I mean, that would be giving extreme benefit of the doubt. I just think, like, as an ally, firstly, like, Emmett is putting...
Well, you think she's just, like, loosey-goosey being like, I mean, I could go either way. Who cares?
I mean, that is literally what she said. And also, I mean, Emmett is putting in work and energy to, like, keep her on side. Like, if I were an ally of hers, whether I'm Emmett or not, I'd be like, why is she calling herself Plato? This is bizarre, unless she really is trying to do the double agent thing, which is unnecessary. Like, unless she is working it out with them beforehand, which, like, maybe that's something she's doing that we just haven't seen. But
well, there's like hours and hours of talking going on as well, right? And we're seeing what, a couple of minutes of stuff she said. So mm-hmm. if you look at it analytically, like, yeah, of course, she's just being dumb. But if she's in an alliance with Emmett, those guys in the alliance will constantly be feeding each other that info of like, we're good, I got your back, we're doing this. There's that constant affirmation happening. And so whether Emmett really felt like she was going to flip on him, that's a question for Emmett. I don't know. But in my experience, when you have people in your alliance that you think are following you, you constantly are just, there's a positive feedback loop you need to be given those people. So it wouldn't surprise me if Emmett was just saying that as like a daily thing to her, just to be like, nah, you know, like make sure we're all together and we can do this. Cause you discuss so many different plans out there with your allies, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like you've got hours and hours to talk about every single option of what could possibly happen. So it could have just been the Kez off the cuff was like, well, what if I went with them and then did this and that? I mean, I hope it was off the cuff.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm giving them too much credit, Shannon.
Well, I mean, it's two extremes for sure. I mean, the fact that Emmett will tell them to their faces no, which can be, you know, if they have an idol, like, you know, he's already that natural target, but it's coming back on you. Then Kez is the other way where she's like, you know, saying she's played at Tribal Council. My would you rather to you would be, would you rather be a player who does kind of make themselves that red blinking light by saying to someone's face, I will not work with you? Or would you rather be Kez who still works with them the next time, like still has her allies, but maybe puts a little bit of people off by calling herself wishy-washy Plato, not Plato? Which one would you rather be?
She might be trying to manage your threat level too. You know, like maybe what we're not seeing is people being like, Kez is a huge threat. She's already had an idol. She's already played an idol. She's doing this. She's doing that. And she's just kind of like, oh, I need to step back a little bit here. And while I've got Emmett leading the charge, he's my shield. And he's like, we're doing this and we're doing that. I could be the one that steps back and being like, you know, I could be the malleable one. They know Emmett's not flipping, right? There's no chance he's shifting his vote around. But maybe in my head, so they don't do any funny business and start ganging up on me, I can step back from it a little bit and be like, you know, it's not a sealed deal for me. Come to me with a good plan and I'll think about it, even though she never would. Mm. You know what I mean? So it could be her just managing her threat level at Tribal.
When people came to you and approached you with plans you weren't going to go with, like which side do you think you fell on of placating them versus just telling them no? Or did it vary?
I like to make my own plans. So people definitely would, I would like to, what I like to do is if someone comes to you with a plan, you're like, okay, but what if we did this? Or like just shape it a little bit. So you're not giving them a firm no or a yes. Or like I would, you know, you gotta entertain the plans from anyone, even the people on the bottom. Like give them the chance to speak their piece. One, it gives you more information about what they're gonna do. If you're the person that's like, nah, we're not doing it. I'm staying firm here. This is a move. I'm never shifting from this. Which is what worries me a bit about Emmett. Is that the people on the bottom are gonna stop coming to him with ideas?
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to have that door open. To be like, look, it didn't work for me this time, but you can see why. I've got a majority here. Why would I flip now? Oh, you want to make big moves. Oh, I want to make big moves. I've already made a big move. I'm the head of this alliance. We're voting you out. So you kind of have to keep that door open so you at least have a ground to the ear and know what's going on. Because third-party information is BS. Can we swear on this podcast?
Yes.
Third-party information is bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to have third-party information flying at you, left, right, and center. So first-hand information is what you want. And you don't get that by selling yourself away and saying, no, I'm not working with that person.
No, I think it is a bit of a one-dimensional game from Emmett, but it was still, you know, it still beat my expectations for what he could do this week. And I think he still, like, achieved within the framework he was trying to, even if it wasn't super layered.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So I want to talk about him throwing the challenge in the next episode. Yeah. Now, I love this move because I was like, what he's trying to prevent is them doing to Simon what they end up doing. I was just kind of confused of why he didn't throw the next challenge, you know, finish the job. So I
have a feeling after watching that one that he did try to throw it. Because you know how you see them basically and then like half an hour later and they still only have three balls. For sure,
really hard.
That was set up to have 12 balls put on there.
Yeah, I also was like, he's like, it's over. And I'm like, but there are no balls on the thing. Like, why aren't we talking about this?
They definitely halved it. Everyone had 2 balls to put on. And there's more just as a thing of like, you know, they're making a show. They can't have dudes standing out there for 6 hours unless they're equipped to do that. So they're probably at the location doing the challenge and then it's not going as fast as they wanted. They've had people on there to test the challenge who have done it much quicker than the guys. And they're probably just like, this is never ending. We've got to switch it to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a case of like maybe Emmett was trying to throw it. And eventually, like at some point, you're just like, well, maybe we won't.
Yeah. I want to go home now.
I don't want to go back to tribal.
Yeah.
Like I like tribal councils, but I still didn't want to be there. If I could avoid one, avoid one, you know?
So are you on board with him throwing the challenges as like a theory or?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fun. I know the audience, like the casual audience hates a throwing challenge because the thing you've got about Survivor is that it builds the guys up like they're overcoming this big obstacle and they're, it's like watching sports, I suppose, right? So people become heroes. You get this bit of a hero thing, and especially for kids, they don't understand that concept of like, why are you throwing this challenge? That you're going to win. You're going to win, and you're going to make it through. You don't even have to go to tribal council is the basic thought. But strategically, I can see why Emmett was wanting to do that. Now, maybe strategically it's better for him to try and strengthen those bonds in his tribe so that there's better numbers going across into merge. But I think what he did was great, and I saw his idea of what he was trying to do, and I think he did it pretty well. So if you've got to throw one at a critical time, throw one. I'm not sure this was the critical time like he had to do it, but I don't know. I don't think it was necessarily him trying to save Simon. We never saw him being like, I'm going to throw challenges so I can save Simon, so I can do this or that, right? But it probably would have been in his best interest if Simon stayed. Because who's going to be another challenge threat for him going into merge?
Yeah, and that was an alliance for him. I mean, when we first see him and Gerald talking about it, like Gerald is the one who's like, they may be in trouble on that side. Like he's more thinking about it from like a brawn on the other side perspective. Emmett seems more like, oh, if I had an advantage that got rid of 4 people tonight, like he just kind of wants to get rid of these braids. And I do agree, maybe that's not it. Like George and Kara want to work with you. I don't think you need to be that antisocial about it. I think it's more for me about like saving Simon and some of your allies on the other side. But I still think those allies are really key. And if you have at least, you know, Rachel and Laura, like, yeah, like get rid of them because you haven't been working with them and you just turned them down to your face and to their face. And in the first, that episode where he threw it, they had the numbers to split because that went so well the last time. But like, it's a really sure thing. The next episode where we're not sure if he threw it, then they just have Laura. Maybe it's less of a sure thing. So I get that too. But I, you know, from either him or Gerald, whoever was kind of leading that, giving the idea, I was like, yeah, like this is the ideal time to do it after a swap. It kind of just makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it made sense. And I think, Rachel and I'm sorry, who else went out? It was Rachel
Georgia.
And who was the second? Georgia, that's
and
it.
Then Simon,
so those guys could have become a big problem for Emmett.
Yeah.
You know? And he's weighing up threat wise, like where those numbers sit and who they're aligned with, and trying to, he hasn't had a whole lot of time with the other tribe. Like there is those mixed dynamics, and they would be feeding him that third hand information, right? Of like, this is how the Brains tribe was operating, but can he be 100% sure that's how it was working? Now he's calling it as he sees it. How is Rachel and Georgia and Laura interacting together? There's a clear division with George and Kara. He just kind of needs to pick his side. And three is worse than two, right? So he chops them. Now he's got two and two. He's already now developed a relationship. He knows George and Kara are estranged from that side of the tribe. So he's painting them into a corner, into having to vote with him.
Mm. Yeah.
And I thought that was smart play.
I think George and Kara are going to end up being pretty essential to someone like Emmett, because he has got Simon 100%. Now. And the Braun Strong thing is just so over, like based on the other tribe. But like, he was like really the one trying to like beat that drum the hardest. And I'm like, Emmett, it's done. They threw a challenge to get rid of, like, your own ally threw a challenge to get rid of your other ally. It is finished now.
100%. But you watch that come back as a theme in Merge, where now, I mean, Braun's clear minority. They're going to use anything at their disposal. So people are trying to bond on the tiniest things. And it might just be that, like, you know, you see him boxing and doing all the fighting stuff all the time. And that's their bonding key. Like, someone might not be interested in that. He's throwing punches or whatever to bond with Chelsea, to bond with Danny and those kind of things. It's just like one of those things. You find some common ground and you build upon that common ground. And the easiest one out there is, I was a Brain and you were a Braun. Don't we want a Braun to win this game?
Yeah.
Don't we want a Braun to? And people think about that stuff. And it might not seem a big deal now because we're kind of like, oh, we're watching it from the outside. But when you're on the island, those small things matter. Like those little things, like people get antsy about it. They get protective about it. It's the same thing of like, Simon wants to be a challenge beast. He's proud of that, you know?
Mm.
He's like, I won these challenges. I did that. And Emmett's got that. It's pride. And it's like bringing that pride together of like, aren't we proud of our tribe? Aren't we proud that Braun can win this thing? Like, stick with me. We got to do this, you know? And I know it seems silly, but out there, that means something.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. And I'm definitely keen to get your thoughts on the Merge coming up. But, like, we'll see about Braun. Because I think Brains, they could kind of get it together, largely through, like, Haley and how she's connected the different factions and worked with kind of everyone. But Braun...
Haley is crushing.
Yes. The Golden Goddess, would you call her? Or is that Braun's too far?
Danny's killed Braun's hopes going into Merge, in my opinion. Like, I'm just going to say it. Horrible move.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, she got blindsided on her own blindside, so I think, would anyone disagree with that?
You're already in a minority, and you're going to give up the shield you have, who is leading your minority, who is dangerous, who knows how to play the game, knows all the things, and has two idols, which he said he will play for you.
Yeah.
It's not like, my mind boggled that even came across her desk. You can do Simon's conversation they're having where like, he's a threat to this game. It's like, of course he's a threat to this game. You're not going to have to convince anyone in Merge that, oh, we might need to get rid of Simon. You're definitely going to have to get rid of Simon. So at least use those idols and at least give yourself a chance to have some kind of an alliance going into Merge. They got nothing now, and it's clear as day. Like, yeah. What have they got?
I think when you look at what Danny was doing, like, you have to look at Haley puppeteering it behind the scenes, because even the move, like the way that Haley went up and suggested it to Danny, like, two things that I did that she loved. Firstly, she said, so when are you taking out Simon? She made it like a when thing, not an if thing. And Danny's like, oh yeah, for sure, at some point. And, you know,
this is your move. When do you want to do it?
Exactly. So she makes it seem like her move as well, even though, like, it's way better. It's very good for Haley and the Brains. It's really bad for Danny. Like, Danny's trading, you know, I spoke to Simon this morning. He seemed pretty genuine about, like, wanting to use those idols for the group. She's trading a very powerful ally, a shield, someone who could protect her for what she thinks are other relationships. And she's found out right now that those other relationships don't exist because they've blindsided her blindside. She meant nothing to them. They have a real legitimate alliance on the side.
Does Danny have no clue of where she sits in that tribe?
Yeah, like, definitely.
What it looks like to me is that she just doesn't have a read on where she is in the tribe. And I think her not knowing she's in a minority, they're walking away and having chats, her, Chelsea, and Simon. You're in a minority right there. It's Braun Brain right there. and you're going to cut one of your numbers who potentially could pick you, protect you going into merge. And I'm big on like body language and reading the way people interact and that kind of stuff. Simon came across in those interactions so genuine.
Yeah.
And I know people are always lying to you and this and that and bluffing things here, but he had such a genuine nature to him that I truly believe he would have used those idols and played them for the girls if needed.
I think so.
Does it benefit his game too?
For sure. I mean, you have one to spare. When I'm hearing my ally has two idols, I'm like, well, that's even more likely that they'll play one on me. I think it's a hard one. I think it is a credit to Haley and the Brains that they made Danny feel so comfortable.
Haley, perfect.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing that side of things of how maybe Danny and Chelsea feel like they are like leading the Brain Alliance. You know, like maybe that's how they've made them feel.
Like, you know, that's, yeah, a terrible read. It's a tough one because it's also the big move items. And I think Haley really pushes that, like how much they need Simon to go before merge. Like, there's a lot of time to get rid of people with idols in merge, as you discovered.
Well, I can see why Haley would have an urgency to do it, right?
Yeah, so Haley definitely, but she's like bringing it to Danny in a way that I think Danny has a lot of time and should use the protection until she cuts him at like the final five or something.
100%. And they're coming into merge and like Danny's like, well, because they probably didn't know they were merging at 13 either. So she's like, I got one or two tribals to do this. Let's see where I can make it happen. But people get scared of like they see the Simons, they see the Emmons dominating challenges. And that's scary, even if it is your ally. Because you're like, one-on-one, I'm going to have to go up against this guy. But when he said he will use idols for you and do that kind of stuff, I think there was a big chance those three could have moved pretty deep into the game. And I mean, time will tell, but I don't think that's going to be the case for them.
Yeah, like she comes back to camp with Chelsea, no idols, possibly a disconnect from any of the other Braun allies she had, like an Emmett, because she's made this move. Nothing with the Brains, who have obviously just blindsided her. Like, for a big merge, we haven't merged at 13 since 2016. For a big merge like that, where sometimes you might pick off a couple of people at the bottom before you kind of fracture and really go at each other, like I could see her as a very easy consensus merge boot because.
Well, 100%. Yeah. I'll be surprised if she doesn't go early.
Yeah.
I would be really surprised just because of where those. Like, Brain's done it. They've gone in there with a majority, and the Brawns that are left hate each other. Where was Danny and Shannon? Where was Danny and Chelsea planning on going from here? They like, oh no, Flick's got our back. I mean, we've seen that.
They thought they were with Haley, but that's a credit to Haley.
There you go. Credit to Haley. But that's what I'm saying. Like, are they thinking they're going into merge with Haley?
Yes.
Looking at that other tribe? Haley good.
That is
Haley
what
good.
They're thinking. Like, because even the conversations she's having with Haley, Danny seems to have a ton of respect for Haley. And the conversations they're having, she thinks.
Up all the information, too, about everything, isn't she?
Yeah. No, definitely. Like, the interactions that they're having, you can just tell, like, she really wants to work with Haley. Like, she does see that as her bond. I think she'll be so blindsided. You see her at the end where she's like, one of you voted for me at least.
Well, did she cuss Haley out at the end or something?
She's like mad that? Because she got blindsided on her own blindside. That's not what Sandra Bullock ordered. That's not what we were doing. So, I mean, really tough one for Danny. Like, she wasn't in a good spot anyway because she's in the minority, obviously. But then she does have an ally with two idols and she is getting a lot of information. In a perfect world, like, they can really use that to do some damage here. And in a more perfect world, you don't throw the challenge, which was completely her idea from what we saw. Like, she's spearheading that to take him out. It's not even like she got cornered into this position where, okay, well, if they're going to go for Simon and we're all in the minority, and if I don't go for him, it might be me as collateral. Like, no, she, like, spearheads.
The scorpion and the frog.
That's what Simon said in my essence. Yes, exactly. Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, but it's true. And I think you're right, that the word big move itis. But I think there is a time to make big moves, but not when it hurts
you.
To
throw the challenge, you know? To take out your ally.
A big move that's positive for you down the track or when you have a numbers advantage.
Yeah.
She wants to do a little flipperoony when they've got like six and the other team's got three and you're like, you know, now's the time to blindside. That doesn't hurt anyone.
Yeah.
But she's hurt herself by being in the minority there and... Yeesh.
I think we're in agreement on this for sure. I mean, to be more positive, you know, to talk about Haley, is it sacrilegious to call her the golden goddess at this point? Am I not allowed to do that?
Oh, no, I'm down. I like it. She, you know, triple threat.
Need a challenge queen for the king, you
social,
know?
Strategic. She got it all. And I love the way she's playing big. I had some questions coming through to me on Instagram. You know, I talk about the show a little bit on the Wednesdays. A lot of people are like, how does she go under the radar? I don't want to see Haley go under the radar. I don't want to see people go under the radar when they're playing so well. So it's really her just managing her threat level now, in my eyes, which is going to be big. But I think Haley's doing it in a way where she's able to put people ahead of her and make them part of that move to feel like the move. Now, she's claiming this that blind side's definitely Haley's, right?
Oh, but there's a million percent.
She put all the blame on Danny.
Yeah.
Right? And just be like, oh, Danny, you know, like there'll be a way to explain that away. Danny's going to be like, who voted for me? Beta can be like, I don't know, Kara confused me with her confusing who we're voting for.
Yeah.
She nearly blew that whole
we
thing.
We accidentally voted wrong. That's a thing that keeps happening this season. So, yeah, that's what we did.
It's definitely a trend.
I thought your name was Simon. The pen went the wrong way. That's what happened.
Yeah.
She can probably come back with that. I mean, I think that Haley, it's interesting because if she's going to win, she'll have to win like you did in All Stars. And by that, I mean she's clearly out in front. Big threat. I mean, you came in with a threat level. She's made herself a threat because she's dominating.
She's showing she can handle her alliance too, right?
Yeah.
Like she's going to be, like that's how she stays safe, is that she's controlled that good alliance. And yeah, she's a threat, but like people trust her. Baden trusts her and she's tied there. She's doing good. Wei trusts her, you know, and there's people that she can pull in and she just keeps that alliance tight and she'll breeze through merch.
It's those raw social skills, but also like it's something I did an off-season podcast about like alliance building, and we spoke about your alliance in All Stars because you filled it with, you know, really good people who maybe didn't know the game as well as you, who you could kind of lead and manage and who relied on you to some degree. And I think Haley's in a similar spot where
she's doing that, and she'd have a sense of how those personalities are sitting right now. Right. So she's looking at who can I play with? Who can I not play with? The people that are wanting to do crazy shit. You can only play with them for a certain amount of time. There's people that want that game to be like pulled through. They need that leadership. And I think she's picking it well.
Yeah, she's got Wei. I think Wei kind of needs that. Obviously, we don't know much about Andrew, but he seems that he needs it. Baden is a bit of her like second in charge. He seems more like her most like natural co-strategist, but like still probably needs it. Like it's a very much like you had the Tarzans, the Zax, the Jackies, where like were they gonna do their own thing against you? Like they needed someone like you to do that against you. Like someone like Haley needs to come into that alliance to blindside Haley, if that makes sense. So it's a very similar trajectory that she's looking at.
That could still happen. You know, we might just see like a lot of people, they come in the strategy, especially if they're not super familiar with the game, is like a lot of them are learning. Like it looks to me like Baden is learning right
now. I agree.
You know, even the way he's talking about the game, you see the little conversations he's having, the strategy he's doing, he's learning. Now, I don't necessarily think Baden's been a student of the game. He's not a Simon that knows the whole thing. He's not a super fan, but he's learning. And for a player like Baden, he's like, okay, I see Haley's in this position. I've been able to stay here and not catch votes and go under the radar with this, even though I was in the minority alliance. Now I'm going to pick my time. So for someone like Baden, it's like, when is that time? Is it a 7? And usually for a player like Haley, around that time, right?
Yeah.
7, the numbers are flipping. People are get desperate to stay in the game. You can string together an alliance that doesn't have as much history as the previous ones, like down the track. And I think that Baden is learning a lot from Haley and probably plans to use that against her at some point.
Yeah, I mean, for an old school US reference, like I think Baden could be like the Mateo to her Rob Cestanino, considering she's already like, getting the bottom feeders together. And I think with AU, what's difficult, and this is what made your win improbable, was that there is so much time. Someone like a Luke in 2019, for example, you know, he has to get down to a final 2. There's a lot of rounds without idols and things like that. So, you know, at a final 4 even, it would just take everyone to be like, why aren't we all voting for Haley? Like what happened to Luke, or he was kind of being targeted from rounds before that and had to win immunity. Like it's just a lot of rounds and a lot of time, assuming it will still be a final 2 to get to her at any point. So she definitely has a really tough road ahead, but like
she's got to win some key challenges
And use her idol.
Like
belt.
She's got to win some, I would say if she's going all the way, she's got to win the key challenges. She's got to win a couple somewhere around like the 7s, 6s. She's going to have, hopefully an idol at some point. Well, she's got it now, but I think that's going to get burnt soon because it's public knowledge. But I think there's going to be, you know, she's going to have that idol in play, and then she's going to have to win one of those final immunities because no one is going to want to take her to the end unless we're not seeing how much they know about Haley's game, you know, and the good ones keep that secret till the very end.
there is a respect level, like clearly Danny, you know, says like she's the gamer. There's a respect level there. But from what I've heard in exits, she hid that she was a super fan. That's what Joey said to me. Nick Iadanza was saying on Twitter some really cool stuff about
Haley was a super fan.
Yeah, so Haley hid that she was a super fan, and the way she like sits out of some challenges to kind of hide her threat level. Like, I think she's doing some active things to suppress her threat level while also running the game and making herself a threat to do that.
Yeah. And that's how she's managing threat level. She's not going to play an under the radar game. Haley can't play an under the radar game. Like, physically, she just can't. Yeah. So she just is managing threat level. And I actually think she's doing a fantastic job. So kudos to you, Haley.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, girl. You're killing it.
There you go. Someone who did not manage their threat level well, I want to talk about, is Simon. I'm going to miss him. Like, as a character, as a person, like, I love Simon. And I'm sad about it. Like, what did you think about what he brought to the show?
No, I love watching Simon. I think I've had a conversation with him. He's a really good dude. He messed up pretty early on by, like, what I saw in the Shannon-Simon rivalry, I saw in the Mee-Sean rivalry, where it's kind of like you have it's so broken and you know you got to fix it. But at that point, it's kind of like, well, we can't. Let's just get each other out.
Yeah.
And that's almost what happened with those guys. But I thought once Shannon was gone, he would maybe pull his head in a little bit, but that's not his style. He loves the game. Like, the thing I love about Simon is he loves Survivor. He loves the game, and he just didn't manage that threat level well. And he just, I telling them he had two idols I like the dude. That's the worst move in the history of the game. Right there. Well, not in this.
Really? Okay, I disagree.
Like, telling people you have two idols, I just think that's death notice right there.
Okay. I want to fight about this because I didn't mind this. And I feel like everyone was coming in expecting us both to roast Simon on this. And like, I didn't think it was that bad because I think the Danny move is so bad. Like, I think she's reacting to that wrong.
Okay,
I think
100%. So if you're a super fan, right, and you're like, I'm at this position in the game, I got my two tied allies, I've got two idols, which I told them that I've got two idols, there's no way they'll move against me on this vote, 100%. But why are you giving, like, I always feel like information is need to know basis. So there was two massive stuff ups for Simon here. Once he told him about the idols, right, he's under the impression they're playing like sensible Survivor games, which clearly not.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, he told them about both. Why do he's got the same leverage with one as he does with two. One's already a public idol, right?
Mm.
What extra leverage do you gain by getting two?
So
by telling you you've got two.
In talking
I
to
never
him
told
it.
Anyone in my game I had two idols. Never. That's a death sentence in my opinion.
But both of yours were secret. And I think that he felt like the trust that could be earned from the first one was negated because it was public and they talked about
it
at the last tribal.
All the way, but like I told people I had one.
Yeah.
Right. And the second you tell someone, unless it's Luke Toki or me in a season 4, people will find out you have an idol. It's a very, very, it's a massive exception to the rule to tell someone that you've got an idol and nobody else find out. Because information is key. So now you've given me power by telling me that you have an idol. And I think when you do that, you've lost the power in some way of that idol, because what's more powerful now is that I hold the secret. And that's a good way to bond. That's a really good way to bond. But have they really needed to use? Was there a situation where they needed to use two idols there? I don't see what the benefit of telling anyone you've got two was.
I think that because he couldn't bond with the first because it was public, and I don't think it was like a great move, but I'm not as down on it as everyone else seems to be, because I guess the problem for me is in misreading that relationship, in misreading, you know, the lack of logic that was coming from Danny, and like that he completely obviously misread it, picked up on no signs, didn't play either one. Like, that's the problem for me. But I think, like, you know, in an objective space, telling your allies, like, I have two. Again, as we're saying, that could be more social. I will use one for you. And he was genuine in that. And in another world where they're reading that, there's something that could be, like, quite collaborative about it and bring them closer. Now, that's not what happened. And he should have read those relationships better. But I think, like, sight unseen, just telling them that wasn't so much an issue for me. I mean, I think it looked from the timeline we got that they were already thinking about it. Not sure if this, like, sped it up and made them want to throw the challenge more. I'm just not as down on it as everyone else seems to be, because I think, you know, they should have taken that as a social thing. And I think that he was genuinely wanting to work with them and play idols for them.
But Simon has also been in the game with them for 2 weeks. He knows how much they know about this game. Now, if I just had to guess, I've never met Danny. I've never met Chelsea. They're not super fans of the game, right?
I don't think so.
What is scary is when someone tells you they don't have one, they have two idols. That is so scary to hear that. And if you're not understanding how that can benefit you down the line, which they can't, and here's where Simon's fault is, he hasn't read them correctly.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And now he's given them that piece of being like, well, I got two. You thought one was scary. Simon's got two. And the only gut reaction they have is to be like, he's got to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was because Simon has like such a big smile on his face. Like for me, he's like a giddy person. And I thought part of me does think that he was just like, I need to tell someone about this. It's so fun that I have two idols. I do think that was part of it, but
that is hard. I mean, but yeah, tell your producer, tell the Voxy.
Yeah.
I just think that's just scary as hell for people when the idols are scary as it is. And they're also now in a game where there's so many twists and so many idols in the game. That they're probably like, whoa, the heads are spinning at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because, like, he's seeing them as you saw Luke, right? But he's wrong because that wasn't the same relationship. They are coming for him.
Because so it's three. Three's a crowd.
And also,
two's
like,
company, three's a crowd. You're not going to be able to do, like, someone is always going to feel left out in a menage.
And also, like, were they his people? Like, he seemed to have, like, Gavin and Emmett early. I think, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. In an objective space, telling to people you're saying is always wrong. I see some good use to that, but then also if he's misreading it so badly, like how can you look at that move? As it, like they're part of each other. You know, he didn't just tell them he had two idols. Like he told two people who were already thinking of getting them out and talking to Haley about it that he had two idols. Like that is a really big like pothole misstep right there.
Yeah,
it's the misread. Like it can't exist without the misread. Otherwise this doesn't happen. So it's, you know, part
and
of the
And he's what? Moves. He's had like what? 3 weeks? Like Danny's come into the game with her archetype being, I'm getting behind an alpha. I'm going to stab him in the back. So that's on her mind constantly. We've heard her say it multiple times. She said it coming in, and probably that's what she's going to try and do with Haley right now, unless that vote is like shook her. Mm. But she, like, he needs to get a sense of that, right? He needs to read what Danny's motivations are. Like, what is Danny here to do? Now, from that first tribe, you saw where the alliance is lined up. Now, why is Danny and Chelsea lining up with you and Emmett in, as opposed to the girls?
He would say relationships.
Right. Relationships? I would say it's probably because both of those, like Chelsea's an MMA fighter. She's used to being around boy energy. She likes that boy energy. She's probably not a girly girl. Danny's not a girly girl. You know that, right? So they're probably thinking, well, this is my spot here with Simon. And is Simon analyzing why those girls are gravitated towards that alliance? Mm-hmm. There's a girls' alliance going on. Like, analyze that stuff. Why are they on my side? You know?
Yeah, it's just such a fatal misread of them and what they were thinking. That's tough for me.
Misread of the relationship.
Yeah.
I think there is an element of what you're saying where it's maybe not the worst thing you could do to tell, but I would never tell two people because it's hard enough to control one.
Yeah.
But to tell two, man, I mean, I just think that's unacceptable. Sorry, Simon.
No, he's definitely listening. I think he was blinded by the fact that the first one was like public, so it was in some way just negated as like a thing. And then like in a perfect world, he has two, they're both secret and he can bring them closer like you did by just telling about the one. But because he lost that, he was like, well, I have this other thing. But again, in misreading it, that's the problem. And it does make him very threatening. So look, it didn't go well, you know, it didn't turn
and
out
sometimes,
well. And
sometimes assuming logical play gets you in trouble, mm-hmm. right? Like where I got in trouble with Jackie on my season was I'm like thinking, we're looking at this split vote. Why would Jackie flip? That actually makes no sense. Like it just made no sense for her game.
It didn't.
You get further down the track. She did it. Great TV. I'm kind of glad she did. Otherwise I would have begonged them like crazy. But she basically, it's not a rational move. There's some emotional stuff attached to it. Now, he would have had a sense about what Danny's emotional range was. Was she getting upset in the mornings? Is she hungry? Is she like, and I just think the read wasn't right. And the read to tell two people at the same time was bad. Sorry, brother.
No, I do remember like Richard Hatch often says, I remember him saying in a podcast that like something that often really good players can do and the mistake they can make is assuming other players will play like them. Like I wouldn't do this. It would be a bad move, but that's where you mess up and you have to think about how the specific player will play badly even and how that could screw you because like people are not perfect robots who are going to do the optimal thing every time. Even if you're a player who will play optimally most of the time, you have to read that suboptimal play from the people around you to do things that sometimes make no sense.
Yeah, 100%. And you got to, you know, you can't trust anyone at any time. Even the alliances, you're like, I really trust this, but you still at the back of your mind, they have their best interest at heart. And sometimes they don't. There are players that don't have their best interest at heart, which I find fascinating. Why are you on the show? Yeah, it was just a bad read, unfortunate for him, and wrong person to share it with, wrong people to share it with. But, you know, you're in a minority alliance as it is. Wouldn't you think that's a strengthening piece?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Look, tough one. I will miss him dearly. Like, he did give everything to the game. He loves it, as you said, so much. Like, it is just kind of exploding out of him how much he loves the game, and that's what I love to watch. So
yeah, me too.
Will miss him.
And he understands and he plays hard. I think he made a few missteps.
He played
at
big.
The start of the game.
Yeah.
He played big. But you play big, and he deserves to play again. And I get that thing where he's so close to merge. He doesn't, you know, you have two idols and you're approaching merge. Whew. If you can take him in, you feel like the world's your oyster, you know? And a player like Simon needs idols of merge. He just needs them.
Yeah.
So I can see the appeal of taking him through. I feel bad for him. I just, yeah.
Look, it was sad. It was sad that it happened. First time someone's been voted out with two idols.
It was sad for everyone except the TV audience.
No, we were crying. I think most people were like hoping that he would play an idol and Danny would go, because that would have still been an epic move, because Haley had it covered. So, you know, she had to do it. She had to protect Flick. And we've had some questions. Why do three votes? Because they have to cover it. If George and Kara are going to put two votes as well on someone like Flick, they need to be able to like go to the re-vote. So they need three votes. So that would have been an epic move too. And we could have kept Simon. I think a lot of the audience was rooting for that, even though obviously this was an epic TV.
Oh, moment. It would have been so good. I mean, yeah, the blind side of Simon. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, that's great. I hate watching that. Like, I would much rather have seen him play the idol. Danny goes, now he's got another one. What does he do? He's in flux after that.
Yeah.
Like, for me now, it's just kind of like, well, Simon's gone. I guess we just, Haley picks him off one by one.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely was hoping he would play an idol. Personally, that's what I wanted, because it still would have been, you know, the fact that Haley had covered it and had thought of that plan B and had protected Flick as a collateral. Like, you still would have been like, well, that was such an epic move, whether
that's
he plays it or not.
Haley Flick thing. I mean, it's an obvious one because she's being birthed by those other Brawns, but how are they not seeing that unfold?
That's, again, like a misread. And this is a misread of logical play, because a logical good player like Haley should go to the one instead of the three. Was she going to pick off Flick and then be at a 4-3 where they have an idol, two idols they don't know about at the time, but she knows Simon has one idol, she has one herself. But who wants to be in that position when you can pick up Flick, be a 5-3, and then you have like a ton of fodder till the merge? So while we talk about not reading illogical play and how that can be hard, for someone like Simon, this was, and like even Danny, this was misreading logical play, that of course she's going to pick up the one instead of working with you three. Like, why would she do that?
It just makes no sense.
It's a relationship thing again, I think, where Simon's talking about like the six they're going to have through merge. Like, he really feels like this is a group that's working, and that's something, again, a misread, but that's something that he buys.
Well, I'd be interested too to hear Haley's mindset on this, where technically she could have sent Danny home, and I feel like long term that might have been better for her game. Simon doesn't need any convincing. Like, no one needs to be convinced that Simon needs to go home. And what we're seeing now, as it comes up to merge, is people are finding like, oh, who's the goat? Who can I drag in? Who's bad at challenges? Who's the person I can lead along here, right? But a player like Haley, who's going super big, kind of needs the Simons in there. Because once Simon's gone, once Emma's gone, and she's like, unless she's throwing challenges in the individual, she's a big threat. Big.
Yes.
So she needs some shields. And I don't know if anyone can step up and play that big right now.
I hear you, and we definitely got questions like, should Haley or someone have alerted Simon to play the idol? Then you kind of maintain some of that relationship. You still get Danny out.
In Haley's, look, I'm just going to play devil's advocate. Haley has an idol.
Mm.
Two idols out there. She knows there's two there. She's got one. Hers is public. Flush them. I've got one idol and you've got two, you're gone. So in my mind, I'm like, Haley made the best move for her game. Now there's no threat of any votes bouncing around. There's another idol that will come back into play, but maybe she finds it. She seems pretty savvy.
Yeah. I mean, because Simon is like, he's such a big threat. And I've been saying this whole time for someone like Shannon, stop going for Simon's friends. Stop. Don't go for the Gavin. Don't vote out the Benny. Like, no, you take out Simon when you have the chance. And I would agree that I like that Haley did that. She went for Joey, head of the snake. That's something she did. She's taken out Simon now with two idols. Like, if you're going to do this plan and then alert him to something and play the idol, you still have fractured that relationship to a pretty strong degree. You might have maintained something, but obviously you are, you know, leading or part of a group that's voting against him. So to leave Simon, who, as we see, is relentless in the game, I'm sure he's refinding whatever idol he plays. As much as he is like a threat and a shield, I just think get him out of there before merge. Like, he's a danger to everyone. And I think Haley can cover it. And I think she's now basically taken out Simon and cut off any power Danny has. It's like she got rid of two people at one. And I think that she now has to go back, conceal the threat level. Like, yes, she has to maintain it every step of the way, but I think that she can do that. And she got out a huge threat who's not coming for her down the track and taking her out, like what happened to Shannon.
Well, I also think too, Haley can kind of go on cruise control for a little bit. She can try and chill and merge just for a bit before it goes. It's going to get hectic, but she's put in some work now. Like, the resume's written.
Yeah.
It's clear she's dominating the game.
Yeah.
And if she's smart, she knows how to talk a tribal. Like, the first third of the game is mine. Like, second third of the game is mine. Like, end game, I did this and that, and then she's sweet.
Yeah, I like the move. I think it was obviously you have to cover it, which she did, but I think taking out Simon, best case scenario, because Danny's got absolutely nothing. So it was really a two for one.
I love that Haley's proactive.
Yes.
Like, I love that so much. People that held an idol and then, I'm going to just play it the same. I hate that play. Haley's thinking ahead. She's proactively playing her idols. Even the way she spun that to make that her move was so good. Proactive gameplay all the way. And I'm not sure right now there is anyone else other than Simon that has proactive gameplay. We're seeing it from Emmett, and he's kind of doing it in a different style. He's being proactive, you know, and he's leading the charge. But Haley's just 3D chess, baby.
It's interesting that you say that, because I want to talk about another decision that's been debated, and that is that at the Rachel vote, George is the swing vote. He can flip either on the split, he can flip maybe with Kara. We never see them talk about it, but that might have been an option. And he does almost like, I think, the opposite of what the choice that Haley had at the Joey vote. Like, they're in the same position where there's probably a change in the game coming soon, a swap and now a merge. You might be able to see it out till there. Hopefully some fodder goes beneath you, but then you might be in some trouble. You and your allies, like, if they get rid of Laura, it's probably going to be George and Kara. So what happens next? Or you take the game into your own hand, you flip, you annoy some people, you have to, you know, come back, maintain those relationships, really restructure it like something Haley has done, but you're not at risk of being screwed because the merge came later than you thought. So I think he did like the opposite of what Haley did. What did you think about his decision not to flip at this vote?
Great. I think George is looking at merge. They're close. Right. He's like, he knows it's happening in one or two. And whilst he gave that IV where he said, oh, you know, if we go down, it's going to be you, Laura, then it's going to be me, then it'll be Kara. But I would assume that in George's back pocket, he's got that thing of being like, well, you know, Kara voted off your friends. If he needs to flip on Kara.
Is that a good situation that then he might have to lose Kara? Like, she's his only real ally in the game.
Yeah, but George has found himself in this position right now where, like, when as a two, maybe people find him a bit more dangerous. As a single, I don't think they take George seriously. Like, I know there's this thing where we're seeing George giving these big voxies and all that kind of stuff, but he's very much, like, reactively gameplay. And a player like George, while he's out there, and he might annoy the crap out of you for the first couple of days on the island, and you're like, ah, this George. After a while out there, those kind of guys, you're like, hey, he's a bit endearing, this old George. You know, I'll keep him around. He's doing what I say. He's showing to Emmett, who's the head of that alliance, like, you know, I'm showing you loyalty. Those bridges had been burnt. Rachel burnt those bridges beforehand. She waited too late to come and speak to George. They're talking to George one vote after where they needed to. The second they did the tribe split, they should have been like, listen, George, bygones be bygones. They didn't have a conversation with the dude. He said that. And then after that's those roles are in play, then you go back and be like, well, actually, George, we've changed our mind. We do want to play with you since you guys have got George out. Like, that just doesn't work. You got to open those communication, those channels. The second that happens, be like, listen, man, it didn't work out for us over there. But hey, we're brains. We've got to be brains. So I'll find some common ground with the dude. But I just don't think they waited too long on that. And I don't think George entertained that idea at all when that happened. Like, he might have said, oh, you know, I was thinking about it. But he found his spot there. Emma's treating him good. Gerald's treating him good. He's found his little place. They're respecting him. They're listening to George. Most important, George is a person who feels frustrated because people don't listen to what he says. And what do you see when they're standing around with Emmett and they're having those discussions? George is like, and I think we should do this. And Emmett's like, good, you know, yeah, George, that sounds good. What should we do, George? What should we do? Because George is the type of person that needs that validation. You can see it because he gets frustrated when people aren't listening to him, you know, and they're playing him really well. So and that, like, why would he flip back to Rachel, who's like, you know what, George, you need to figure out a better way to be better socially thing, or hush and be quiet and do your thing and like just play. Like, George doesn't want to be told what to do. He wants to be listened to.
Yeah. I mean, I think I do see both sides. Like, definitely don't flip apart from Kara on the split, because then you're not even coming back to majority and you just flipped on your number one ally. Nothing there. But in terms of like him and Kara, I feel like for me, I'm just like a little bit antsy, like the same way with Haley. I would have been antsy that she can't make it to a swap before she's at the bottom of the hierarchy. And I do appreciate that hers was so active to take the game into her own hands and to make sure that she would be on the top of the hierarchy. But for George, I do think they're not chess pieces.
George has already seen, we've seen, he doesn't play well when he's on the top. So maybe
when
he's
was
ready.
George on the like, top?
Well, you know, at the start, he had power in the vote. He had the idol. He's shown that he's had power, right?
Yeah.
George has had power. He's been in positions of power. And I just don't think he plays well. He had that advantage. He might be like burned by that and be like, you know what? Maybe I'm not leading from the front. It might be better for me to hop in back and just get through from there. Like, well, you see, George's social game and like, how do we make this sound?
Oh gosh.
It's whack.
Yes. Okay.
Social game's whack.
Mm.
If you want to watch a funny clip, I think it would have been the first tribal after he had that advantage. He's in vision camera talking about, oh, you're crap, you're old, you're this. Oh, who told you that, George? No, I mean, that's just the perceived opinion. Whose opinion? Well, mine.
Yeah.
What? Dude, what?
This is the issue
shows
for me.
To me there's a complete ineptitude of
Well, that's what I think with George is, like, he doesn't have the social game someone like a Haley does. So when he has those relationships, and they may be hollow to us because Emmett's saying, you know, if I had an advantage to get rid of all of them tonight, I would. But they are playing it well where George thinks this is really legitimate and where circumstance might make them really legitimate at the merge because Emmett doesn't have a lot of other places to go. So,
well, sure. And Emmett's probably thinking, does George have the social wherewithal to be able to pull anyone else in? Because, you know, Rachel does. You know, Georgia does. Like, yeah, they've been at the head of an alliance before. There's still some ties on the other side. Does George have that ability going in? And this is what this thing happens where people are kind of like, who do I want to take deep into this game? And from my mind, like, whilst we get George being like, I think we should do this and that, and I'm the king and this and that, I guarantee you on the beach, Emma's thinking, I beat this dude in every single challenge. I beat him socially because everyone likes me. They don't like him. And he's not going to flip on me because he's got nowhere else to go. So, of course, Emmett wants to take George through, and George knows that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think for George, he has those relationships now, and he hasn't for a long time had any relationships. Like, his temperament does seem really different to me, and I think that's the difference of when people are coddling you or yelling at you, and that's a really big difference of what he's had. And there's something really safe in that, that he probably wants to go to. I'm sure there's no love lost with these women that he doesn't want to go with because they've all voted against each other. Like, they really can't move forward with those genuine relationships. And I think he's probably thinking, like, long game for the merge, as much as maybe it's dicey to get before the merge, and that's why I would be concerned and maybe flip. Yeah. But, like, on the other side of that, I feel if he can maintain these relationships and do an affirmative thing of kind of sticking with these people rather than just alienating more people by actively flipping in a game that has been so alienating through the whole first half of the game,
then
he's building forward. That. And I think long term, if he can get to the merge, and if it doesn't come later than you wanted, then, like, then you have some relationships you can actually play with rather than just getting there but being alone. So I think I'm convincing myself out of the flip maybe, but I see both sides.
But yeah, I know people are kind of like, well, you know, he flips there. He had to flip on that one where he had four. There was no sense in him.
Yeah, no. Coming back to Laura, it was like, George, you know math. Yeah. I know that you know math. Maybe other people don't.
If he was making a move, it was on that one.
Yes.
And he's sitting there weighing it up, and he's like, well, these guys I've burnt before. They've burnt me before. Or I go with Emmett, who I've got a good relationship right now. I'm building this capital. and he'll take me into merge.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think it was probably hard on the other tribe for George at first, because he's kind of like, I know the game, I know how to play, and I do this. You can see he has an understanding of the game, right? Mm-hmm. They look into him for strategy, they look into him for puzzles, and that makes you want to be a leader. It doesn't necessarily mean you'll be a good leader, which is why then once kind of Joey's like, well, I know the game too, and then he's like stepping up, and there's all that angst of like, but I know it better than you. That's where that division comes about.
Mm-hmm.
So with this one, you're seeing instead of him, like Emmett's using him as counsel, as opposed to going against his ideas. He's like, well, what do you think, George? And then letting him, you know, George come up with a plan, or, oh, mm-hmm. we should do this or do that.
From the very beginning, you could see that, like just the way that they really brought him in. Even Danny was doing that before he went. Like, it's kind of no surprise to me that he would put his game at a small risk to maintain those relationships, because they are really positive and there hasn't been a lot of positive. Go back to Laura and Rachel. Like, not only have you all been voting against each other and you try to vote him out, and Laura actively voted George out. He's actively voted her out. They've been saved by different mechanisms, but like, it's also been, you know, contentious. There's been like yelling, you know, there's been fighting. It's been actively bad. It's not even just in game. So I think we can sit here and say all the time, like, I still continue to think, thank God Braun threw the challenge. Thank God the merge is coming. If it doesn't, George is either losing Kara or is in a dire circumstance himself. And I am a little worried that he was misreading it to a degree, that Emmett is telling us, you know, that he'd be happy to get rid of George. And I don't think George is reading that. I think it might change now, but I'm a little concerned about that. But I also think, okay, now you've gotten to the merge, it worked out circumstantially, all right, you took the risk, and you do have real allies to play with, and not just like numbers that you have due to just circumstance.
Yeah, yeah, real numbers.
Yes.
You know?
Relationships.
And that could just be Emmett, like, virtue signaling his alliance, right? Emmett's telling, like, you know, he wants to keep Kez and Gerald close, and he needs to keep them close. So it's always, that is always going to come back to Braun Strong for him. That's been a strategy he's been employing from the first thing. And I think Emmett also learned a crap load from Simon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's played with Simon in the first couple of weeks. He's picked up some stuff and he's like, all right, it's time to step out. And he's doing that. But can I just segue here and say, being on the bottom, it feels bad, man. Laura handled that like a champ. Like a champ. Like, I think she had her back against the wall. What I would have liked to have seen is her flip. I would have found that more interesting to just like have her go. She didn't need to do it in the end because she stayed in the game. Thankfully they voted for Georgia. They voted for Rachel. But Laura, you could just see it in the camp. Like, the day after, they got burned on the vote, but she's still upbeat. She was feeling it a bit heavier that day when it was definitely going to be between her or Rachel. You could see she was a bit down, but that episode, I think it was Sunday night, I felt like she was playing it like a champ. You know, she knew the numbers were against her, but she stayed upbeat and she was playing well from the bottom there. I want to see, and I know people in minorities that are getting destroyed, one of you has to flip. Thing of like, we're staying strong. I just don't get that gameplay. Why?
Yes.
Go to the other alliance and be like, listen, keep me in the game and get rid of Rachel, and you have me in your pocket. And like, it's an ego thing. I know you don't want to say that. You want to stay with your friends, et cetera, but if you're not giving yourself that opportunity to stay in the game, like Rachel's talking about, I'm going to fight to the end. What did you do? How did you fight? Did you give them an option to vote with you? Like, I'll be like, look, I'll pile one on Laura. Keep me, Emmett. I will be your puppet. Just get yourself through the game. At that point, you're on death's door. Like, throw something up. And I just get disappointed by seeing minorities go to the end where it's like, we have our two votes against seven.
Yeah.
But we're staying strong. One of you just flip.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I did an off-season podcast with a clinical psychologist where she told me that this is the strategy. It's called the foot in the door psychological strategy, where you can get in ahead of someone else.
There you go, girl. Now we're talking.
And there are like winners who have done this, Danny Boatwright, Chris Doherty, who are on the bottom and who are like, I'm getting off the sinking ship first, like pushing you off. Hope you'll vote 100%. For me in the end. But I also think, like, you have to be who you're going to be. Laura isn't going to flip. Like, she almost sacrificed herself last week for Rachel with the, when she played an idol for Rachel, she could have gone home. Rachel is someone who's like a mentor of young people. She seemed to like really mentor these young women. I don't think either are big fans of the game, if I'm going to hazard a guess. Yeah. Like, I just don't think that this is in their DNA to do it. I think you'd do it. I think Haley would do it. I think Simon would do it. I think that people who need to play this game relentlessly.
I got out on Phoebe, you know, it was done. And Alliance was done. And just to clarify, the foot in the door, right? It's like the foot in the door theory is you get your foot in the door, you sell them something small. Mm-hmm. So that then you can sell them something big.
Yes.
And I really like hearing you say that, because I feel like that foot in the door theory gets thrown out the window by a lot of the minority alliances, where they're just like, nah, because it gets combative, you know, and they're like, I'm staying with my two. We're going to do ride or die. Thelma and Louise. Nah, man, no. You need to win Survivor. Stay in the game one more day.
I agree.
See how quick that can change.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to sell them the, you know, the other minority alliance member, and then hopefully they'll work with you. And it does work. It does get you further in the game. It does maybe make people want to work with you. And even, I think, just like lessening that threat level, once they're all gone and you can make sure you're the last one left, even Emmett was saying that he might use Laura to get rid of Kara and George. So just being the last one left, so just being the first one to go to them and say, I'm getting rid of them, at least you've bought yourself the time of those other minority members going, and now you've made it to emerge. So it's time, it's relationships, it's just building something on anything, and yeah getting your foot in the door.
Like, form a little house, you know? Yeah. And I think a lot of people talk about the end game towards All-Stars, where they're like, oh, the majority just never flipped. Why would a majority flip? Why would you do that? Give them a reason to do it. And multiple times I said to guys like AK, like, on this vote, show you with me, put one on Brooke. Brooke, show you with me, put one on Shawnee.
They almost did.
But why would I choose to work with them? We're on a vote that's inconsequential to them. They're staying in the game. It doesn't matter who they vote on out of principle. They don't vote on that person. I can't work with you now.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving me nothing to work with.
I agree.
It might not have mean that I would flip, change my whole majority alliance. I have my thing there, but it didn't even open that door of possibility to be like, well, I want to work with AK. We're in two, three times I said, man, we're going to do this. If you put a vote there, you can show that you work with me, and he wouldn't do it. You know? So what does that show you? Oh, no, he doesn't want to work with you. So if you're in a minority, you got to give him something, like a little something, get your foot in the door.
I would agree, but I just don't think these were the players to do that. And they do want to talk about both Georgia and Rachel, who we lost here. The first with Georgia, we actually got a health update that I want to update. Maybe not everyone is following the Australian Survivor social media, that her illness was extremely legit. She had an ectopic pregnancy that wasn't picked up when she got voted out. Thankfully voted out. Like, thank God that she was voted out to go home and seek further medical treatment, because they had to remove the pregnancy. Like, she's been through it. So definitely want to say, like, from the podcast, from me, you know, thinking of her through all of that, and her health is now, she says, fine, but, like, you know, traumatic and horrible. So I just wanted to get that out there, because some people might not know, and it's like this harrowing thing that happened. So just have to tell everyone that.
I mean, yeah, so she's so tough. And then to even, like, go back into the game, I was like, oh, man.
I think that's why we assumed it was a vague stomach bug, because she, like, they showed next time she's coming back. Like, she was only out for 24 hours. Like, this woman,
they do not take you out of that game unless you are in big trouble.
She wasn't in big trouble. Like, you know? extremely big trouble.
That's what I'm saying. They do not take you out unless you're, you know, 1 foot from major problems.
He was like, and I think with the benefit of hindsight,
that's why they took her out.
Like, they took her out for 24 hours. But they put her back.
I think I heard a lot of people saying too, Shannon, they're like, oh, it's such a, she skipped the tribe.
I just say that a lot.
That's the worst thing that could possibly happen to you. Like, she's now out of the game for 24 hours. She doesn't know where anyone sits. This thing changes so fast.
Mm.
And sure, you miss a tribe or you skip a vote, you're screwed on the next one, and we saw it. Skipping a full day of, to come back from that is crazy. There's no advantage in that for you coming out of the game. There's just no advantage at all.
Well, for her on the bottom, though, like, from her specific position,
I still think she would have had a better chance to stay in there see what was happening, where people were sitting, what the relationships are. Like, she was screwed coming back in the game. She's in the bottom anyway, but now you're coming back with less information. You don't know what happened to Tribal. You don't know where people are sitting. You've missed a full day of bonding, a full day of chances to change your, to get your foot in the door, to change your trajectory. She missed out on that and got voted out on the next one.
Yeah, no, I do see that. I think that we as a fandom were just shocked because we didn't know this rule existed, and it just seemed ridiculous that JLP was like, as per the rules, as you know, they can leave for 24 hours, and we're like, we actually don't know that. So we were confused. And it seemed so vague because we knew she was coming back. And I feel a little manipulated by the show because then it comes out that it was this like horrible thing, which with the benefit of hindsight, she probably should have been medevac all out, but they didn't catch it. And I was like, oh my God,
I think it was probably just the production was being sensitive to her privacy.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And like now after the fact, she's come out, she said this was what it was. You can be like, oh man, that was super serious. But they're not going to put that in the edit.
Yeah.
It was, like they, as much as people like to give a hard time to the editors and whatever else, they do take that into account, and they would put someone's personal health and safety ahead of making good TV. Well, for the most part.
No, it was a blindside, I think, for the fans, because we all assumed like casual stomach bug, and then it was like no harrowing thing, and we were like,
they're
well,
not taking you out for casual stomach bug, Shan, I'll tell you that much. Like No, you would have to be so messed up in so much pain for them to take you out, because I've been there and I didn't get taken out of the game.
I remember
you. Now, admittedly, I was in a good spot and I didn't want to stay in, but I had a full cyst in my ass cheek that was bleeding out into my pants.
So good to know.
3 weeks straight.
Thank you for telling me.
I've told you this before, but I forgot it.
Thank you for telling me again.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't understand, like, what is a medical emergency? You're saying it's so hard to take someone out, you know? Yeah. What is a medical emergency where you get taken out for 24 hours, but you should be able to come back in the game? Because as we know, she shouldn't have.
She probably was having trouble standing up. They would have looked at her, the color of her, all that kind of stuff. And I think probably they took her out and been like, well, it's dehydration. But, like, you're talking when you get the medical check and stuff and, like, stuff's messed up. Like, they would know. There's combat medics out there that assess that stuff, and they would only take you out if they thought there was a really big risk that you were going to be hurt. And, I mean, 24 hours is nothing. So they take her out probably with the idea that she's not coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you that. Like, I got stitches when Rogers speared me in the leg and they stitched me up on day one of All Stars.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get that.
You don't know that one?
We did a four-hour deep dive.
Yeah, I definitely talked about this. Matty Rogers threw a stick. It went into my shin. I ended up getting 10 stitches on the beach. Combat medic stitched me back, get me back in. But they said, like, if you know you feel like you can't continue, you can come back in, but tomorrow's the day. But you miss that 24 hours, you're in trouble. It's not an advantage. Like, people remember that stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's just finding it out at the time. Like, the other night I found out that if there's, like, electrical storms in the AFL, you have an hour to play again, or the team winning at halftime wins. It's like, all right, okay, something's going to happen.
There's so many rules, right? Like, there's so many rules. Like, there's so many variables and things that can change. And to see you guys down at the start of the season and be like, these are our rule book. You know, it's hard. There is published rules. There's like a book. You get to read them.
No, the other day in the AFL, they did. They got out the manual. They're like, I guess this is the rule. And it's like, okay, fine, I accept it, but I didn't know it. So it just sounds a little ridiculous to me because I didn't know it before now. So now we all know the rule and we know what she's been through, and it was harrowing. In terms of Rachel, like, I spoke a little bit about it when I put out the exit interview podcast. I think she's such a cool person. I think that getting the intro package in episode 11 seems to have shown every single person. I got a message from a lot of people on Twitter, like, oh, Rachel's going home. I don't think they can do this, guy. Like, editors, we know what you're doing. Please don't do that in episode 11. Like, we know she's going home.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky thing. But and people love reading into the edit, but there's a game at play.
This isn't reading. I could see this from like a mile away. This was you reading, but it was like reading a billboard.
You know, but also, I don't know. How do they hide it? I've seen some people getting mad. They're like, oh, these promos saying it's the biggest twist.
Oh my God, you're coming in and saying all my things that I've said.
But I'm like, dude, what do you want Channel 10 to do? This week in Survivor, two boring votes.
No, not two boring votes, but just not like,
They're a marketing machine. They're a promotion machine. They want people to watch that. They don't care if you're disappointed later. As long as you watched it,
yeah.
People are sucked in to survive. Like, they're looking at new audience members all the time. It's not just the people who are currently watching the season. They're trying to pull people in. So if they do a promo and they're like, tonight, a very straightforward vote. Probably can miss it. Doesn't make a big deal. Hey, Emmett's playing a pretty good game. Like, what are they going to say?
No,
of course they're going to be ready for it. And then I know reading the edit of whatever everyone else, Dave's win on All Stars telegraphed. Bullshit.
Yeah, it was Dave. I'm sorry.
No,
who
wait,
else was going to win? I think I thought Bo.
But
come on.
I had a big edit on season four and I got blindsided.
Thea looked like she was going to win season four.
Oh, yeah, of course. But you have to read into that. You're an experienced person of the game. How many super fans are there of Survivor in Australia, Shannon? Tell me. 5,000?
No, much more than 5,000. I hope so. If there aren't more than 5,000, how do you think this podcast is going?
Well, I mean, you tell me. I don't know.
Better than that.
They're going after casual audience members, and not casual audience members, the ones that keep the lights on, that pay the bills, aren't reading into the show like you are.
Yeah, no, I know. I said this, I think, 2 weeks ago. I was like, they're not making the show for us. That's why they have to repeat themselves. That's why they have to do the marketing. We can criticize it, but just know, like, this is why. It's because it's not for us, which is fine. I mean, I know what they're going to do when it's a boring vote, because I saw it this week. They'll be like, George's big move, and George did nothing. So, that, you know, they'll always say something, and it's good, because we're not spoiled, because maybe nothing will happen. Everything to the marketing team is a big deal.
How many votes have you been able to read this season from the editor?
I feel like I've been pretty off. Like, I really didn't think Kara would screw up. That was a big one.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
I think they've been a pretty good job this season of hiding what's happening. Sure, the Rachel one. But, like, when you know someone is going to go home, like, how do you make that interesting TV?
Yeah.
They try to find a bit of jeopardy. Like, people are going to be pissed that she didn't get a package. Oh, we didn't hear from her. That's so annoying. But she's out 6 episodes in. She doesn't matter anymore. Like, it's somebody else's show. You know what I mean?
It's your show. That you say that because it's always been your show.
And rightfully so.
You have to know the position you're coming from where you're like, she's gone now. It's not important.
What are you feeling upset for? You're feeling upset for the people that they could have been in her show too. You know, that's what you're signing up for.
Yeah.
You're not being paid to be like, I'm going to be a principal on this TV show that I'm acting in. Like, if you don't give them the right stuff, or you're not doing interesting stuff, or you're not playing hard, you're not going to be on the telly. It just is what it is.
I hear you, but I just want to say, like, you need to know how biased your perspective is as someone who was the main character of 2 seasons. I hear you, and I do understand why they do it from an editing perspective, but like, you benefited.
I gave them a reason.
Yes. True.
To be that character, you got to create kind of your own storylines. If you're going under the radar, like, what? I mean, we haven't heard from Wei this week, right?
At all. Not one confession.
What would you like to hear from Wei this week that you didn't hear?
I'd like to hear 1-2 confessionals about, like, how all the brains are doing and not just, like, Haley leading it. But I also am not mad at the Haley content. So, like, am I? For Haley, I'm like a filthy casual. I'm like, yes, give us more, you know?
Yeah, she's great. She's interesting to watch. She's great to listen, you know? I just think there's so many things at play that it's just really, really hard to get in there where everyone's going to be happy about how much airtime they got or this or that. I'd like to hear different perspectives from people's things if they're involved in moves. But if you're not involved in anything in that app, I don't need to hear what you had to say about it. Who cares?
I mean, I'm sure like someone like George will say the same if I ever get to talk to him. Because again, like, I'm sure Luke will say the same.
But George gets to have his opinion on everything at the moment. George is great telly. He's great to watch. And yeah, I mean, they got to have those. This is the archetypes. They look for the stereotypes, they look for the characters and all that kind of stuff. And people go out where they go out. And I don't know.
Well, speaking of George, I want to get your take on this twist that we saw where Kara finds a golden ticket and they go to the tribal council. Like, was there much in this? Would you want to see this again?
For that tribal, no. I mean, I thought it was, it's tricky because they're putting twists in to amplify gameplay. Right. And if we go back to the very first ep, they want these guys to hit the ground running. We've just come off a season where there's people who know the game. Everyone's been playing big, playing really hard. And how do they make sure they start that first episode with a banger? They force people to play. Now, you've been doing exits. I would be 100% certain Braun had that same advantage George had. They're wanting stuff to happen. Now, they've had 2 bad votes, or they've had 2 very straightforward votes. They know we're going to see 3 episodes this week. What do you think the production's like? Well, we'll just leave this to be a boring one. They probably didn't know it. Like, they put those puzzle pieces into play. They move those pieces around, right? They're not rigging anything, but they have puzzle pieces they can put in play at certain times. It's not all set from the very beginning. Things can be moved around, I'm sure. And then they put that in probably because they're like, whoa, those are two pretty straightforward votes. We better make sure something happens on this one, not knowing that Simon was going to get the shit blinded last night.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they just put that in and it was just a bad time. But also they know they're merging. So whoever's producing is like, well, we know we're merging. We need to use this now if we want any kind of cross-tribal interplay. And I mean, I don't like all the twists and turns. Like, I know they do it to force people to play games, but I don't know. I didn't like it.
Well,
I thought it was just unnecessary.
Well, yeah, I thought it was just a bit meh. Like, I'm thinking about you and the popcorn. And if you let all the popcorn out and you don't get an idol, instead you get like, you get a one-way ticket to a tribal council you're not even part of. You'd be like, all right, thank you, but where's my idol? And, yeah. And also, Simon did tell me that he, in fact, did find that first advantage on the Brawn camp. So, yes, good read on that. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like, well, it was also likely that they'd lose the challenge and then it just wouldn't exist. There also is no idol in that camp right
play.
Now.
You know what I mean? They're forcing them to play is what they're doing. They're not leaving it up to chance, because I know people get mad when 2 episodes is pretty straightforward. So I think they just, it's just a piece to like force them to play. It's throwing it, it's making people think and making them do things a bit differently. Or because say that blindside of some wasn't happening and something else was at play or something crazy was happening, and then there was a numbers, you know, the numbers changed. Maybe Simon was like, Simon and Danny realized they were in a minority. Oh, let's pull across Karen George, let's go over in this tribal and chat to these guys and be like, listen, let's make a deal. Like, you vote with us and we get Haley out, blah, blah, blah. Like, just didn't go down like that because they were all on board with the Simon blindside. So I see why they put it in. I don't like those kind of challenges, especially as a player. I hate twists. Putting all this work and then they're like, and the 19th person voted out is Chris, and he's going to dinky old island to come back into the game tomorrow. Enjoy, guys. Have a good night.
Yeah. Well, how crazy that there was no twist. Like, I think when people saw 2 other people at Tribal Council, there was a little bit of PTSD. Like, they're definitely, like, whoever's going is definitely getting swapped with them or something, and it didn't happen. And now I think we can put to bed any rumors of, like, they rig it for the people they like, because they could have saved Simon you're swapping.
There's no rigging going on for people. Like, they have puzzle pieces they move around as the game's happening. There's no rigging. It's not protecting some person over this person or that person or any of that. That's just not happening. It's happening also, it's happening too fast. So for them to set up, okay, because I heard people being like, oh, they saved Kara or George, right? They would have an idea of where that vote was going. But to set that up in the time while you're at Tribal, they'd be like, oh, they already knew that was happening. No matter what happened at Tribal that night, that advantage was getting played then.
I think the best argument against it is like, they don't save a player like you, for example. And then they do save, you know, like a Simon Black. And from a TV perspective, like, do you think that this is, you know, Daisy and Simon Black, like, they were fine, but, like, they could have saved you. It was right before, and they did it. So, like, it's not rigged, because that's what they want to do. They clearly want you on TV.
Yeah. I mean, and they would have had a sense of that point of, like, who's giving big boxies, who's you know, going to be a big character in the story and whatever else. So they know who they want in the show. They don't mess. They're not allowed to. There's an Australian broadcasting standard that prevents messing around with the game too much. Like, there's an actual contract you enter into. So with Survivor, it's like proper, it's a game. Like, you're playing a game. They can move certain things around. They move the pieces around. They might change when a challenge is done compared to a different time, but it's not rigged at all. They don't keep people in that they don't want to keep in. They don't really, you know. Otherwise, Simon will still be there, I promise you that.
Yeah, exactly.
Shannon will still be there, I can promise you that.
Exactly. If they were rigging it, they'd be like, oh, Simon, it was a non-elimination. Kara and George are now on this tribe, and you're going to Brains. And they didn't, and they could have, and no one would have questioned it, because often when we see spectators at Tribal Council, it does mean there's a non-elimination, and there wasn't. Yeah. So that was a definite.
How about this for a twist? Yeah. They have to guess who Kara was going to vote for. And if they get it right, that person goes
Who could guess that? Who would know? She doesn't even know. Who could guess?
That's what I'm saying. It's a big twist.
Exactly. Yeah, in terms of this twist, I like them telling it at the challenge so that, you know, Haley could strategize around it and get the right amount of numbers on the split vote, for example. I like that transparency, but as a twist, I was a bit like, meh, you've hidden so many idols. This tribe actually doesn't have an idol. You should put an idol in. But in terms of, like, the candy, you, again, big part of this, big part of the fact that we see it every season, I would say. Are there strategies to this, or is it just, are there strategies to, like, even picking the sticks? Like, the way that they try to make it so fair, and Laura's second.
There's a tribe dynamic there, right? There's a tribe dynamic for, so picking sticks is the easy way to get around looking like you're bullying the tribe. So Emmett kind of has to entertain that idea. Mm-hmm. I think probably Emmett had the ability to be like, no, I'm going first. But he also, you know, he's a sensible dude. That's an intense moment. That, and they show those guys doing that really quick, but mm-hmm. they probably sat there for about an hour, 2 hours figuring out who's going first, where, how are we going to figure this out? And it's like the social play of like not wanting to offend people or coming across too strong or too brash. And we see Emmett in his voxies and he's doing his thing. But there's also Emmett that's interacting with these people and being sympathetic towards them and like not wanting to make them feel bad or bully them or make them feel bullied or whatever that is. So to go in there and like there's that part of you that wants to be like, nah, I'm going first. That's just, it's just not the reality of the situation. And Aussies are polite people. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I've been at dinner parties. Most people are like, would you like the last piece of chicken? So there's that whole thing going on of like putting yourself first makes you feel bad. Like really only a desperate man goes in there and is like, I'm gone. And usually it's the desperate man that doesn't have the numbers to make that happen.
So
you like, if you're a, who was in trouble on that? I forget.
Laura. Yeah.
If you're a Laura in her head is just like, I want to go, but she's, the dynamic's not there for her to be able to force that issue through, and she could stay staunch on it. And then they'd just be like, no, Laura, no, Laura. And it would make them hate her more. And I experienced that too. I think at the, I was on the bottom of the tribe when we were doing the food auction.
Mm.
And I knew all I wanted to do was be like, I'm going to spend 500 straight up, which is what Phoebe did.
Mm-hmm.
And Phoebe went on.
Yeah.
But you just don't want to be that person. So I just sat and I didn't bid on anything. And I let the tribe have the power to do that stuff because I knew my time was coming. I bided my time. You don't want to be at the, you don't need any other reason for them to want to get rid of you. And that's why Laura didn't speak up when she did.
Well, I think like as a majority of five, like they let it truly go to the sticks and then she's second. And it's like, well, you know, maybe you as a group should not be like, I'm first, or maybe like Laura, you're last. But then again, it is a social game and that's extremely antisocial. You are about to merge with her.
Extremely
like,
antisocial.
It's really mean.
Do that. It's really mean. And that plays into it. Like there's real emotions at stake here. As much as you want to be like heartless game player, there's real emotions and that's what makes the game so unique. But like I said, like Phoebe and I were on the bottom. And the consensus was, well, the majority alliance can have Tarzan going first, which I was very comfortable with because I didn't think Tarz was going to go in there and wreck it. But then we're drawing sticks. And that was a compromise we made to get that to cross. Now, so it happened that Tarz went, Phoebe went, and I went. So Phoebes and I put ourselves there so that we could go first. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Laura's thinking, look, just let me get the right stick and I got a chance. And that's better for her to roll that dice than completely alienate herself by being like, F you guys, I'm going first.
Yeah, I definitely feel though, like, I'm not just imagining you finding that advantage instead of an idol. You'd be like, why did I even waste this popcorn? Like, why, you know, where's my idol?
Dude, but that would be the dream to find that advantage and then just be like, well, that's BS and just actually eat instead of looking for stuff. But sure. The other thing is I'm kind of like, it was just hidden so poorly. And I know people will be like, but so was the popcorn one. But like,
but that
I
was the first time they'd done it. This was the exact same thing. Yeah.
I couldn't see it in there. And I'm like looking at that thing and there's a big old piece of parchment hanging out the side and whether mm-hmm. it was rigged to not look like that. But the fact that they basically got to the end with Kez before anyone else like emptied those things out, there were so many not emptied jars. I was a bit mind boggled by that, to be honest, but would have ripped that place apart, made
We've
a big pile of candy
twice.
In the middle of the floor.
We know you would have. We don't need to be told twice. All right. Well, before we get to the chizzy, I want your take. I want to guess, who are you saying is going to be the merge boot?
Oh, who is going to be merge boot? Where are we sitting here? I think merge. There's a chance it could be Laura, maybe.
Yeah.
She's kind of alienated like the Baden crew and that. I don't know where she sits there. It could be Laura. Could be Wei.
Wei?
Yeah, I don't know. I just get a sense that Wei's maybe a little bit on the outside of those things. The guys who are good at the challenge stuff might be thinking, we need to get someone that they don't consider to be good at challenges. You know, that's going to be my off color one. I don't think anyone will agree with that. But I think there's some strong guys that if Emmett wants to stay further in the game without having to win every single immunity challenge on the thing, he'll be talking about like, I want strong players to go through. We need to get someone that's not good at challenges out, otherwise this is going to be BS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I could see definitely like a super majority forming, like those brains with Haley and her group connected to Baden, Kara, George, connected to Kev, Gerald, possibly Emmett, Flick. Like, that's a super majority of connected people and threats. And then I think someone like Laura, maybe someone like Danny would be my pick, because I just think 13 person merge is a lot, and just like pick off these people on the outs, and then they'll probably go at each other and maybe a vote or two.
Well, things will get serious down around like the 7-8, right?
I think even before. I think it's going to depend, but I think most of the brains, not Laura, but everyone else, I think could really come together here and be quite powerful if they can work with George and Kara being the big if. And then it's going to be like those Brawn's hangers on, and then it's just going to be when do those Brawn and even George and Kara flip. Like, that could be at like an 11, like we're really breaking
the brains right now. Has got some big challenge threats too. Right, especially for individuals. Maybe like they're not working that great as a team or whatever, but Andrew, really good balance, super fine motor skills. Haley, right? Baden. Who else we got in their brain? But they've got some good challenge.
Way won a challenge.
Way did win a challenge. No disrespect to Way. But when you think of that mentality of like the stronger challenge players are going to be like feeling very threatened at merge. They're going to want to do something, you know?
For sure. Well, should we get to the chivvy and award our best?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
Getting to the chivvy, David, you won the chivvy as well as the season, but the chivvy is more important. Do you want to give your points first or should I?
Well, why don't you start, Shannon? Then okay. I just footnote, I can't win chizzy points. I know you want to give them to me, but I'm not in this.
All right. No, I don't break the chizzy rules, David. Not even for you, not for anyone.
Just check.
You already won one chizzy. We probably should have sent you some merch, but I'm like notoriously bad at sending the chizzy winners their rightful prizes. I'm so sorry.
I'm still waiting. I'm holding out hope.
Do you want one Golden God beer? That is the prize for last year's chizzy that I didn't send you.
Treating me pretty nice at the moment, I'll tell you that much.
All right. I'm going to give 3 points to Haley because it's obvious, because the blind side of the blind side was epic. She's running circles around everyone else, you know, bonding with Flick, maintaining all the relationships. God, she's cool. I just want to be friends with her. I want to be her, all the things. I don't need to say more. Like, she's been incredible. I never thought I'd say this, but I will give 2 points to Emmett. Because of everything I've said this week, like, I do think he was good. I think that he probably should have finished the job and thrown the challenge if that was his strategy, but I liked the challenge throwing idea. You know, even if he was trying to throw that last challenge and he couldn't do it, you know what? Like, you stick to your guns. We stay out there all night if we have to, because, it's a throw off. So he didn't finish that job, but I still liked it. And I thought he was like, you know, talking to Kez with quite a bit of logic, maintaining things, sticking like a strong ally, and did maintain the numbers he wanted through to the merge. So good job on Emmett. And I will give a point to Baden, because I feel like he's Haley's second in charge. He's a connector to George and Kara. Like, he does bring them in there. I said on Talking Tribal, I'm not super sure that they really needed to. Like, they could have had George and Kara vote for Flick and they already had it on lock. But Nick did say, and I would agree, that, you know, he does bring them in. To do that extra effort, it's inclusive, and it didn't tip Simon off. So they still got it done. And had it tipped him off, they would have been fine too, because they had Danny as a collateral. So I think he's going to be really important through the merge, because he's a very important, like, you know, connector between some factions. I'll give an honorable mention to Flick, because I think she acted really well at being on the bottom and made that good relationship with Haley. And then I will give an honorable mention to Gerald. I said we're not seeing enough of him, but proposing the challenge throw to Emmett. Emmett got all the credit in the edit, but we did see him throw it out there, and I like throwing the challenges as an idea. So those are my points. And David, who are you giving points to?
Well, just on that note, I think Gerald's playing really well. Like, you're right. He's not getting given those big edits, but he's showing there's key pieces of information that Gerald says where I'm like, oh, yo, this dude understands the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, even some of the questions he's asking Emmett, some of the questions he's coming up with, and seeing Simon get the idol. So anyway, well done, Gerald. But of course, I mean, I got to go with Haley.
Yeah.
How do you go past that for three?
Mm-hmm.
It was just a big week for her. And Shannon, I want to have some different answers to you, but two for Emmett.
I love being validated.
He's really in control of that. he's really in control of that alliance. I don't think he put a foot wrong there. Kept Kez in line, strengthened that relationship with Gerald. And I think he probably, you know, he got George and Kara in there. I don't think they're thinking about flipping on him yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will go, honorable mention, I'm going to give it to Flick.
Well, you know, you can still give one more point.
One point. I'm going to give a point to Flick because of the relationship building and because mm-hmm. she's on the outs with those, she's recognized where she is. And I think her social gameplay is really good. I think we're probably thinking about along the similar lines. There's I don't think the edit gave us too many things this week where you could argue outside of those. Well, I'd like to hear other people argue for someone else getting votes. We could give honorable mention to Kara for finding that useless reward.
She went first. It was obvious. Literally, it was sticking out, as you said. You know, try to be precious with your honorable mentions.
Blowing up Baden's game at the tribal.
Yeah. Okay, I'd love if this
was all intentional. You know, I said, who was I talking with? Maybe Harry talking about it being the Gavin of Australian Survivor or whatever. But it was Phil. Remember Philip? He was the FBI agent dude.
I
held out this hope that at the end of Phil's game, when he sat down with Rob, he was like, I tricked you. I've been an asshole for this entire 39 days. But I'm actually a really nice dude. I just did that because I knew you'd vote me out straight away and I had to do something against Rob because he's so likable. And I'm really hoping that there's this part of Kara that's kind of like, no, I knew what I was doing the entire time.
Okay.
Of course, I was just playing undercover.
Yeah, undercover. The editors just choose not to show it because
it's going
to
be a big reveal in the tribal council.
All right, well, look, if that happens, I will credit you with that. But now the charts, Haley has now sprung into the lead where she should be, 12 points now. And she wins the Chizzy this week, deservedly. Simon was the Chizzy leader up till this week. He leaves on 10 points. Heartbreaking stuff. Kez is on 4. George is on 4. Emmett just went up to 4. And with your point, Flick just went up to 4. Joey left on 2. Baden is now on 2. Gerald is on 1. And Danny had 1 point last week. So those are the points. I have some JLP tweets for you. Do you know that JLP is very funny on Twitter every week, David?
I don't use Twitter, but tell me about it. I know JLP is a funny dude, so tell me some stuff. I want to hear it.
All right. Well, he actually mentioned you this week, so that's why.
Did he?
Yeah, there you go. Well, not this one. He said, Kez is willing to go to Rock tonight to get rid of Kara. Huge brass ones or just cray cray? That's how JLP really talks. Would he say just cray cray?
JLP has his finger on the pulse of the cool kids culture. So
everyone's saying
that cat was cray. I do not like hearing people flippantly say rocks. That was a big thing for me with Kez. I was like, oh, I don't know if you understand what's going on in this game.
Rocks. Do you know what happens at Rocks?
Business.
Yeah. Maybe she
and
thinks
just,
Rocks
just
is
think
fun.
To flippantly be like, yeah, maybe we'll go Rocks. I can't stand that. It's like, I don't know. I take the game very seriously so that when people are flipping about it, people want to play. There's like thousands and thousands of people that want that spot. So stuff like that kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Maybe she thinks that Rocks is like just the two people who got votes pulling Rocks. I have heard that a lot of this cast didn't know how some of the things work. So maybe benefit of the doubt, she just didn't know what Rocks meant. Is that benefit of the doubt?
Either way, it's bad, isn't it?
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, don't you think that would be something you would investigate a little bit before you go in? Even if you hadn't watched all the seasons, just like find out, come some of the, just Google, how do you play Survivor? Maybe that's what I should do for a YouTube video, an introductory lesson.
Please, that is such a good idea. This is what you should do. So you're going on Survivor, but you've never seen an episode. Do you know how worthwhile that'll be for a lot of the cast of Australian Survivor?
Never seen an episode, but you're fit and look hot. You've been cast on Australian Survivor.
So you're a personal trainer. So you're an ex-athlete, but you've never seen Survivor. Like, David, you will get some views. You will get a lot of people getting cast on the show. Do it.
There might be something in that.
Definitely.
There might be something in that.
Definitely.
Jeepers creepers. But anyway, yeah, just the Rocks thing, man. No.
No.
JLP is actually a very, very funny dude. He's,
I know.
Man, JLP, I've got a lot of respect for him. And it's a very tough job he's got there at the forefront of that show. And I think especially this season with all the insanity, he's doing a great job.
Yeah, well, he tweeted, hilarious watching George gloat about wearing Mitch's shoes. I wonder if that's part of his strategy, targeting people for their wardrobe. Him strutting in Emmett's spandex huggers would be gold. Now, don't put that out in the universe, JLP.
All right, all-time worst wardrobe choice.
Those
I mean, are we there? It's pretty bad. They're pretty bad.
They're not great. And also, this is something that your friend and mine, Luke Tokey, was accused of. I remember reading headlines that were like, Luke Tokey is like a serial killer in his original season because he kept stealing people's clothes after he voted them out.
I think that's just... See, I always love the little extra value things that someone on the show is thinking of doing to make it a little bit more interesting for the audience. Mm. You know, just like these little pieces. And that's one thing. This is why I love Luke, is because he does stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So Luke would do that all the time, is take people's clothes and wear it as like an homage. He dressed up like me when I got blindsided. Yes. Those kind of things are just so good, like value adding to the audience. And we haven't seen a lot of that this season, I don't think. One, because I think the gameplay has been so hectic that they probably don't know what's going on. They don't have much time to think about other stuff when they're trying to figure out how to split a vote. So they just there hasn't been much of that. So I thought it was really funny, George being like, I'm wearing whose shoes with Mitch's shoes.
Yeah.
Mitch's shoes are really comfortable. They must be expensive. So
good. Your George impression on point.
Oh, yeah, I like doing Brahmin impressions, man.
So this is...
I miss my impressions.
This is where he tweeted about you. He said, we are here for a good Sandra Bullock. And then he put a gif of you saying a blindside is the most humane way to put someone down. So I was like, oh, we must know that David's on the podcast this week. Thank you, JLP.
Well, that was sweet of him.
But
that was a good point.
Later on, he said, these guys don't know how to work a communal reward, right, Benji? And had Benji with the nachos. And I was like, now that's rude, because like, I think the popcorn gif is probably more iconic. And he chose not to mention you there. And I was like, rude, JLP.
Well, he's just, you know, he's paying homage to the rest of the, you know, there's been five seasons. You got to respect the other cast members, right?
Isn't that the opposite of what you just said? You're the one giving good TV. You're the only one who should be mentioned.
Good cast members. No, but that was a great moment, that Benji Nacho thing. I mean, he was at the forefront. I definitely colored what I was doing in challenges because I'd seen how much impact that had. When I watched that, I was like, jeepers creepers, Benji. Mm-hmm. So when I got food reward, I was like, well, we'll give the people what they want.
He walked so you could run. He disgustingly ate nachos so that you could sit on the floor. Kneel on the floor, eating popcorn off the floor.
Out the popcorn machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, slightly different, but, you know, you got to go big on those moments.
For sure.
They're there for a reason. That's one thing, you know, like, I think if you're a good player, you understand when they're giving you a TV moment. So take it.
For sure. Okay, so he had a picture, and again, I'm going to have to describe it like I described the beer, but he said, this is what the ring looked like at the challenge test. Some mods were made to make it more suitable for a family-friendly show. I don't know how to...
Go ahead, explain to me. Sorry, I didn't see it. Tell me what it looked like, Shane.
It was like a big round circle and then like a long phallic... phallic rod.
What do you mean by phallic?
I'm just going to look up a synonym. it was go look at it on JLP's Twitter. I can't describe it as well as I can describe David looking like.
It looked like a giant Johnson.
It was bad. It was funny how R-rated it was. Like when you read the tweet and then you click on the picture and you're like, yeah. So.
No, it was good. It was good. One thing that I love JLP does is he actually gets in and he'll have a crack at those challenges when they're being tested before you go and do them. So he knows what you're going through. And I think that's good because he doesn't take those things lightly. Like whilst we're looking at that thing being like, oh, look at those guys holding that rope. That's hell standing up there. And they would have been up there for hours.
Mm. Okay, so, last tweet from JLP. Mm. He said, nice advantage, Kara. Maybe you can redeem yourself and put that vote you missed on Georgia. Wait, she's already gone. ... Shit. But him giving it to Kara.
He's very opinionated this season, isn't he, Alan?
Every season.
I mean, that's good. Like JLP adds that element, that extra layer, because he's been there and he does that well. Like he'd know a lot of stuff we don't know because he's probably seeing as they're piecing it together and it's happening live. So he does a good job of keeping people interested. I think he's a fantastic host. He's a good man, JLP. He's got the players' best interest at heart, and he loves the game and he loves the players. So I like seeing these interactions, and it's all good fun and whatever else. I hope Kara's a good good sport about stuff. I haven't had a chat. I haven't had a chance to chat to her, but jeepers. That's that was a good one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he's a must follow, JLP.
Definitely, if you've got Twitter. His Instagram is pretty good too, I got to say. He does put a lot of fun stuff up there.
I truly love him. He's great.
Well, I like all the behind the scenes-y thing. Like he put up on Insta the immunity idol with the guys that carved some stuff out on the Buddha box. Like, I love that stuff. For me, the behind the scenes-y fun stuff like that is the best part of the show. Well, not the best part, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, putting the notches into the indie idol of how many wins they'd been on each side. So, well, we got to pretty much all the questions I had. I'll throw one at you, kind of because you know you did have two idols, and that's maybe were you the only one before Simon in Australian Survivor to have it?
I think I was. Yeah. Simon has equaled my accomplishment and then surpassed it by being voted out with two.
No, that's not smart. Surpassing it in what way? I was talking about this with my brother. There are a lot of people who've won who had two, like at the same time. Tony's an example, Jeremy, you. And then there's like now a Mount Rushmore of four people across the three franchises with South Africa who've gone home with two. So it's kind of like high risk, high reward. Like you might win because that's a lot of power, but also the downfall is massive. So Jonathan Gray asks, how much more paranoia did you have when you had two idols than one? Do you think Simon overcompensated for this?
There's definitely like having one idol is massive paranoia because it changes the way you kind of view all the tribal councils after that. Because there's one, you're going into them, you don't have an idol, you're fighting, you're doing your thing, and you kind of have to stick to a plan. But when you have an idol in your pocket, you know you can change that plan. And if you don't, you're like, oh, I can do it a different way. It gives you that ability to change the outcome of stuff. So it gives you this weird anxiety, especially if people know about it. You change the way you play. Simon's a confidence player for sure. We saw that when he went out with two. And I think probably in Simon's head, he's coming close up to merge, and it maybe makes him less likely to play his idol. He's also just come off a pretty successful move with Haley, right? So he thinks they've got a bonding thing, and I respect you. You didn't play your idol. I didn't play my idol. We've both got this gun to our head. It's just that Haley pulled the trigger first. So I think the two idol thing just facilitated that happening. I think whether Simon had one at that point or two, maybe it accelerated things, but I don't think he would have played it much differently. Poor Simon to go with two. So two idols is a great responsibility, but like I said, you got two, you just don't tell anyone about it.
That's what they say about great power. Yeah.
Great power comes great responsibility. I think that's what I wrote on. I think I said that to him at some point. But,
are you Iron Man or Spider-Man with two idols? We can only be one.
Yeah, you can only do so many Marvel references. Yeah,
exactly. Well, this has been so fun, Dave. Thank you for giving us your very valuable time. Yeah, no, come on, recap and give us your thoughts on all these players. As you said, the beer's coming out, so much going on, TV projects. You're giving Q&As on Instagram every Wednesday. Where can people find you to check out all that exciting stuff going on?
Well, I pretty much only operate out of Instagram now. And if you are trying to contact me in DM, maybe send an email because the DMs are a bit blown up, especially with the Q&As. But I really actually wanted to stay out of it this season.
Good luck with that. I mean, you just came off a recap, so well done.
I really did. Like, I'm doing other shows. Survivor doesn't define me. But the second I watched that first episode, I was like, this is just too good.
Yeah,
I gotta dive in here. And as the current champ, waiting to see who's crowned next, it was hard not to dive in. But just my Insta is pretty much the only way I interact, and I try to, especially if you're commenting on my stuff, I try to get back to everyone if I can. But just my name, David Jennett, G-E-N-A-T.
Great.
And then look out for the beer. We're going to launch it on there. We're going to have some really fun competitions and bits and pieces. So if you are a Survivor fan and you want to meet some Survivor players, we'll probably be doing some stuff on there for that as well.
Yeah, I'm excited for people to see it. I'm looking at it right now. I feel your eyes as the Statue of Liberty follow me anywhere in the room that I go. Like, it's piercing into my soul.
That was the intention.
Yeah, it works.
I think we're launching it next Wednesday. So I think this podcast is coming out a bit before the beer. So you guys might have to wait a little bit before the can reveal. But world exclusive, Shannon, there you go. You got it.
I love that. And they can, think of the image in their mind based on what I've described. I can't wait till they see the reality. I think I did pretty well, but
I think there's not many other ways you could describe.
Yeah. Well, Statue of Liberty I thought was good because I was, you're meant to be a god, not the Statue of Liberty, but you are a Statue of Liberty style god, I would say.
Yeah.
You don't have like a hammer like Thor. Like you're wearing a toga. Why?
Why not?
It's good. It's very good. Well done on that. It's following me with its eyes. Stop it.
It's been a lot of fun. Imagine opening your fridge and having that in the shelf.
I have that right now. I don't have to imagine it. I'll open the fridge, get a midnight snack, staring at me. Johnny still is a baby. Why is this happening?
What? Yeah. Well, he's a cute little guy, that John Easter.
All right. Well, I've got a lot going on. Talking Tribal is out for this week. Nick is guest hosting because Luke is on Big Brother VIP.
Well, we're allowed to say it, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's got announced. So,
what do you think about this? What do you think about this news?
Well, I knew Luke was leaving, and it took me a while to be like, wait a minute.
Literally. Luke doesn't like telling people he's gone either. Like, he just likes to disappear, and then he loves giving people surprises like that, which is very funny. But I'm very excited to see him on BB. I don't think that house is ready for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could do really well. Obviously, he's a great player. He's super likable. He could win the votes in the end. And I've never watched Big Brother before. There's a lot of things deterring me probably from watching it, but I, you know, rooting for
Luke. What's that? What's deterring you from watching
it? I mean, I'm like not a Big Brother person, like, you know, famously so.
Well, like Poor Man Survivor or something, you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't even watch the Big Brother where it's a jury vote at the end, the US one. This one being a fan vote is like sacrilegious to me. Also, I like Dane Beams. I don't know if anyone else on the cast is like enticing me in.
See, I would watch it just for Luke.
Yeah, you know, that's all it will be.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll watch it for Lukey.
Yeah,
And then it's going to be good TV because a good production company making it.
Yeah,
our old friends of Survivor. I think there's a lot of similarities on the challenges and the way they do stuff. Let me just segue into something else, Shannon. Why aren't we doing a podcast on Beauty and the Geek?
Yeah, I've been watching your stories. I watched it.
Is quality programming?
Is it?
Oh, it's so fun. It's legit really fun. Like, this is going to sound very ironic. I don't watch reality TV.
Clearly.
After all, seasons of reality TV I've been on. And Pearl loves, like, just being able to switch off and watch reality because for her, she doesn't like watching dramas. It's too heavy. Whereas I like watching kind of, like, intense, you know, scripted shows. She was sitting down one evening with the telly on and was like, you just watch this for 5 minutes. And I was hooked. Like, the kids they had on this season was so funny. Like, the casting was absolutely amazing. The kids were super nice in a time where I think we're in so much flux in reality to just have some heartwarming, good TV on there. I haven't laughed like that in ages. It was so fun.
Well, when Lockie did the star jumps, because I cried laughing.
I was crying laughing. That kid, he is so nice, that kid. I've been chatting with him a little bit on Insta, and just bless his soul. Just a good egg.
Yeah.
But I know I sound like a shill for the show because
you were on Channel 9.
I was on Channel 9. I don't have a Channel 9 contract to say. But it's just really good telly. I've got some really good laughs out of that show. Really good laughs. But Sam, the dude with the big orange afro, why would you do that to him? Why would you cut his afro off?
You have so many thoughts on this. Is anyone watching Survivor watching Beauty and the Geek Australia? Shout out if you did.
It's the crossover.
I watched it.
They cut off Sam's afro. I was very upset. And not in like a kid and play kind of like high top way, which I would have been acceptable.
I was just making my husband watch so much Survivor, and he's very supportive in that way. He wanted to watch Beauty and the Geek, so I watched for him. I did enjoy it, but I was like, what is this show? Is it a competition show? Is it a dating show? Is it like a self-discovery show? It's kind of all and kind of none of it. I don't know. I was confused. I've never watched it before.
The cute little challenge at the end. Oh, there was a bit of strategy going on.
A little bit.
Should we do just another hour on Beauty and the Geek?
No. We're done. I've done a lot of podcasting this week already. I've got to say, like, I, you know, did 4 hours on the Winners at War ranking. It's Winners Week here at International Survivor. I did that podcast with Robin Tarrant. I have you now on this podcast. Survivor South Africa last week was with Jacques Berger, and next week for Winners Week should be with Adam Klein, US Survivor winner, who I spoke about on the Winners of War podcast. So hope everyone checks all of that out. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed and follow me at Shannon Gates to get all the content. Next week, I will be back with my friend and Survivor South Africa co-host Mike Bloom to talk about week 5. And the exits are already out. They will not be coming out after this recap. I put them as a special podcast because Simon was very kind to ask for extra time with me. So I got like 30 minutes with him. And I love my chat with Rachel too. We talked about a lot beyond the show, online trolling and what she's doing in that space. So I just wanted to make that a special thing and put it out as its own podcast. So I hope everyone's checked that out. But David, thank you again so much, giving up so much of your time to talk a lot about Survivor, a little bit about Beauty and the Geek for some reason. It was great to chat to you.
It was good to chat to you too. I can't believe how many podcasts you're doing, Shannon.
It's too much.
Having run a podcast briefly, mind-boggling. And isn't it time that Rob changes the name of his podcast empire?
What?
Or is
he
just put a plural on there? Rob has a podcast, because there's quite a few going, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like you're a branding expert. Like, that sounds bad.
Yeah, I think we need to. Should we rebrand?
To Raps? No.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Raps.
No.
Shannon Gus. Raps. Raps.
Right. R-H. Look, you're making me wonder about your marketing skills, but then I look at you looking at me in the beer can and I'm like, how could that be true? You are
look,
a marketing
I'm an ideas
genius.
Man, Shannon.
Yeah, exactly.
Ideas, man. They're not all good.
They're not all winners. No.
Not all winners.
All right. You are staring at me still in this game. I cannot, you know, everyone will see it in a week, but.
What, have we run way over time again?
Run way over what? There's no time limit.
Well, didn't we do like 4 hours last time? How long is this one?
This is over 2 hours, which, you know, I know that you didn't have a lot of time today, and yet here we sit talking about Beauty and the Geek and your beer and raps. For some reason.
Raps-ing about stuff. Okay.
Okay.
And that's me.
All right. Thanks so much, David. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to all you guys for listening. Hope you'll check out the exits as well, and I will see you next time. Bye.
Australian survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swamp.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shkeli.
1 million rubli.
Tribe of spoken.
Tribe of spoken.
Tribe of spoken.
Tribe of spoken.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.